call the meeting of the Finance Administration Oversight Committee to order. For those of you that have been hanging around longer, we apologize. This meeting had been rescheduled for 9:30, so we're actually starting closer to on time than we normally do. Yeah, that's the secret forever. Always say that 9 and start at 9:30. Are there any additions, changes, or corrections to the agenda? If not, the agenda is approved as presented. Same thing on the minutes. Are there any suggested additions or changes or modifications to the minutes? I apologize to staff. There were, in fact, two changes that I found and that I never transmitted to you early. One is on page 1, under budget issues, second line, the key drivers for the next year include. And would you just put in there which the general manager suggested, so it's very clear we're talking about what is being proposed as a budget as opposed to anything that might be adopted at a later date?
Sorry, I'm not understanding.
It says, in the second sentence, says the key drivers for the next fiscal year include. Mm-hmm. Just insert after drivers, which the general manager suggested. It's what you guys are saying. And the other one is on page 2, action item A, about halfway through the paragraphs, it says, Congress and the Obama administration are currently developing. Mm-hmm. Since these are minutes for January 8th, I believe there was no Obama administration at the time.
Yeah.
Good piece of history.
So you might want to adjust that sentence to match reality for January 8th.
The incoming administration.
Are there any other additions, corrections, changes? I would even leave off the statement you just made, Rick, because I don't think the incoming administration was in any negotiations at that point. They were studiously avoiding it at that stage. If there are no other additions or corrections, the minutes stand approved as modified. We're now going to go into a budget review, and let me at least comment briefly on what I believe would be the best thing for us jointly to be doing in this process. This is a review where we are trying to find out where different parts of the budget from a policy perspective might be a little bit different from the way they necessarily were presented. So it's not that we're trying to find things that were wrong. It's not that we're trying to find things that we think you budgeted in ways that shouldn't have, but where we might be taking a different policy perspective or a different set of assumptions as board members from where the staff presented things. Unless any member of this committee objects, I don't think we should be making any decisions today. I think what we should be doing here is raising issues, giving staff a chance to think those through, a chance to go back and see what the implications of any of these issues might be, and come back to us at a later date. So I think we want to agree this is something that we as a committee believe might be an area for exploration, and we might say what it is that our issue is, but I don't think we're saying we're changing the budget at this moment. If that's okay with other members of the committee, I'd like to make it that kind of situation, because I do think it's important for staff to be able to go back, look at these things carefully and thoughtfully, and say, you know, it looked good in the beginning, but now that we've thought it through, here's a problem. And that's almost always the case, that there, you know, a little bit of reflection is worth an awful lot when you're doing budgets. Finally, our objective here is to look at the budget, as I said, from a policy perspective prior to considering anything like service changes. We don't want to go to public hearing for service changes that we don't need to make. So today is going to be devoted to looking at what we can do to this budget, how many changes we can make that make sense, that are things that might be this different view of policy, and that would, to some degree, relieve some of the constraints on potential service changes. And then what we will do is, if we get to the point that we still feel we need to make some service changes and look at some other options, that will be next week's discussion. Does that work for everybody? Mr. Graham?
Mr. Chairman, I want to definitely agree with what you've just said. I mean, I'm very concerned about all of the agitation within our stakeholders and our riders that have occurred as a result of a leak of a document that, quite frankly, I had never expected would have been created. I don't know how that whole process was put into effect. And for that document to be leaked and for everybody to be running around justifiably concerned that Metro's going to close at 10 p.m. and we're going to take all these draconian steps, and one newspaper in particular has hauled out the fare increase scenario, and everything else has just, we've just created a lot of agitation that we didn't need. It wasn't justified, and it could have been avoided. And had the people done what I believe this board asked them to do, and then if they had been kept their findings or their, what they wouldn't even label a recommendation, by the way. I don't know how many of you read the PowerPoint, but they said, we are not making any recommendations. But had they just simply brainstormed, and then as a result of a brainstorming exercise, said, here are some ideas from those of us who are involved in this issues, and all of this would have been kept reasonably confidential, then it might have been useful. But as it is, this is not a useful exercise. It has produced nothing but negative results. And so I really want to appreciate what you've said, Mr. Benjamin, because what I've been saying is that we've got to scrub the expense budget, number one. We've got to do our best to understand the possible impact of the stimulus package, because all of our jurisdictions are anxiously awaiting that analysis. And then, having taken those two steps, we can then proceed to consider service reductions, if any. But the way it is right now is we've got the wagon in front of two horses, and it has led to the kind of confusion and irritation that I can't tell you the number of people who have spoken to me, and I'm sure have spoken to every member of this board and staff, about how upset they are. And I'm saying, this is stuff and nonsense. Forget it. Let's get to this in an orderly fashion, in a responsible fashion, which is, I think, what the course that you've just now charted.
Thank you. I think we're all having the same types of discussions everywhere we sit today. So I don't find this one very unusual. I want you to know that I am also glad of the clarification, but I'm not at least as annoyed as Mr. Graham has indicated his concerns, because I don't believe that my decisions must follow those leaks, those suggestions, or those guidelines. Now, do they set a threshold in the larger public as to what the gravity is of this budget? I'm not uncomfortable with that. And I believe we have to talk all sides of this to get a clarity as to what we will do, one, to set the policy that we want to see in the long term, and what it will take to get us to that policy. And that means having our public understand how serious this is, and if we analyze it, they get to be privy to the entire analysis, not the portion that we may end up deriving our adoption from. It causes a lot of consternation. But as we're looking at a growth in demand for service, I think we need to help people understand what it takes to provide that, what it takes to provide this service, and how we need to examine our budget to derive the right policy. So I would have preferred to have the discussion in the budget meeting. I look at this as a workshop. I don't look at this as an action that we're to take. I look at this as a working exercise that we need to go through in order to understand what the obligations are of the authority from a financial standpoint, and then what are we going to do about it? And that's going to determine what we think this authority should be providing to their customers and how we get there. So it's a different philosophical way of arriving at the same thing, but I think we have at least a process in place that I think we should be in charge of and not anyone else at this point.
Mr. Albert or Mr. Giancola, do you wish to make any comments?
Not at this time.
All right. I would also note that staff has prepared very nicely these books, which as close as I can tell show what presentations we have gotten up through the present time, which allows us to go back and say, oh, that's what they said that time, which is extremely useful. And we appreciate that. I presume you would like us to leave these here so you can keep putting presentations in, or are you going to give us whole new sets each time?
We can do whatever. If you want us to, if you want to leave it, we can, you know, take it. Or if you want to take it, we can duplicate it again.
Okay.
Whichever.
We might want to save some money in trees.
Right.
Okay. That being the case, shall we move ahead with the 2010 budget review, understanding again that any changes that we suggest here are suggested changes for review by the staff?
Yes.
Okay.
What is your intention regarding going into executive session?
As soon as this portion of the budget review is over, that's the way it's scheduled on here.
So that we first
before we get to the action items, but after the public portion of the budget review is completed.
So it's your intention. I'm a little confused. So you're going to have this document, and then your intention is to move into executive session and then come back for the action.
Yes.
Might it not make sense to do the action items first and move them out of the way?
We could do that if you wish to do that.
I mean, I'd rather not have the action items be bifurcated in that way. Some of these concern the district.
I wish you'd brought that up earlier.
Sorry.
Yes.
A and B of three is what you wanted to go through. Is that what you're saying? That you want to do the review and the stimulus?
I wanted to do three and four of this budget. The budget review in open session, the budget review in closed session. The issue being that there are some items of the budget review that we cannot do in open session because they deal with things like labor negotiations. And then come back and have somewhat of a summary of all of that as to where we are, mm-hmm. and then go to the action items. If there's a strong preference to move to the action items right away, we can do that.
Well, I think we would have a more unified committee meeting. We dispose of the action items, which I don't think is going to take us very long, and then had the budget review and then retired for those executive session issues concerning the budget.
Okay.
Bit more unified.
There's a request to reopen the issue of the agenda. Does anybody object to Mr. Graham's suggestion? Okay. Let's move to item 6A.
Mr. Chairman. This is a fully reimbursable program and by the District of Columbia, and I would move approval with the you and I have discussed this matter.
Correct.
And the District of Columbia is prepared to have this designated as a demonstration project through FY11. And with that change, and then I'd like to speak to the motion very briefly.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Mr. Graham, do you wish to speak?
I just want to say that in my role as chairman of the Committee on Public Works and Transportation, our committee identified this funding for this expansion. It relates very definitely to relieving congestion on 16th Street, which is one of our more congested routes within the system. And we are currently not 100% certain of the parameters. Mr. Albert and others are discussing with me the actual line, which we will have clarified by the board meeting in terms of the number of stops, but we are prepared to go forward with this at this time.
I would also like to make a comment because of the reference that Mr. Graham made. First of all, let me note that, I'm sorry, Ms. Hutchins, you want to?
I wanted to go back to the point that this is identified as a demonstration project. I just wanted to go back to a larger reference you had several months ago about demonstration projects. And what was asked was a criteria to come to this board, set the criteria, and that criteria would provide us recommendations or guidelines as to how to evaluate it and how to move it forward. And I have not seen that.
Well, actually, they are here, and that's one of the things I was about to comment on. I did think that this was one of the, and you may want to come back after you take a look in there.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and that may be a worthwhile discussion. The staff has done a number of very, very important things here. Number one, I think this is a really, really good proposal. This is the kind of thing that we as a transit system ought to be doing. Also, one of the directions, as Ms. Hutchins indicated, was when we do these demonstrations, especially in a situation like this where this is about to become a regional route at the end of that period, if it meets the criteria, we have to define what the length of the demonstration is. And here it was very carefully defined and well defined. So I think that was very good. Also, we asked that there be criteria established and that those criteria be measurable so that we can see whether or not the route has done that. And once again, the staff has put forward in this a set of criteria that would be used to judge the route, and they seem like pretty reasonable criteria. The issue that Mr. Graham was speaking about is one in which I have to admit that we in the state of Maryland have a much more significant budget problem than we thought we did. Our budget problem is sufficiently severe that not only are we having trouble seeing how we're going to do the funding that needs to be done in this proposed budget for fiscal 10, but we see that problem and that concern stretching into fiscal 11. And we don't see a high probability that we will be able to pick up additional service in fiscal 11. And so I called Mr. Graham and said, hey, I got a problem here. You know, at the end of this demonstration, we aren't going to be able to do a regional route all of a sudden. It doesn't look right now as though there is, in fact, enough money to do that. Now, should that happen, should it turn out that for whatever reason, our budget constraints become less and by fiscal 11 we're in a much better place, I'd be more than happy to have that turn into a regional route earlier. But as of right now, we're not in a position where we can be effectively committing to some really good service being continued as regional service at the end of fiscal 10. So he very kindly agreed to extend this to fiscal 11, and I agreed that if our budget problems got any better, we'd revisit this and move it earlier. So that was the nature of the discussion that we had. So I would like, when the resolution is presented to the board, that be reflected so that we are very clear that it is through 11 unless finances permit it to come at an earlier date. And that way we have immortalized that agreement. Are there any other comments? Then we are prepared to vote. All in favor?
Let me know.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I want to go back to what you described as the criteria.
Yep.
And I think it's on 29 where we talk about the measures of ridership and peak, et cetera. I think that's one measure, but I don't think it describes demographically why and how it becomes the regional service. And I guess I was looking for a broader piece. While the measurement of the days of service, the peak hours, et cetera, are very good measurements of one, the project itself, but does it meet the criteria that we look for in regional projects that go beyond the corridor, the corridor it's serving and the ridership that it's serving, demographically, who it's serving, et cetera. And maybe that was not what you were thinking, and I know before we didn't have we did have numbers, but we didn't have the numbers relative to the long term of a project that we were looking at. And I was wondering, wouldn't we like to describe why it's now a regional service because of the ridership growth and who it serves, versus why is it a corridor?
Mr. Hughes?
Can I respond? I apologize that it's not in there, and we can clearly correct that. We've assumed all along this is a demonstration. A demonstration would meet the criteria. If it meets the criteria, then the demonstration is successful. Whether or not it is a regional service versus a non-regional service, we would then apply the board-adopted standards that were adopted, I think, 12 years ago about what a regional route and what a local route is. And I did not include those standards in here, in the document, but those are the ones that we would apply. And there's a set of guidelines about whether or not if it serves an interjurisdictional route, then it's automatically a regional service, or if it doesn't do that, it meets two of three criteria, it would become a regional route. And for the record, I could amend this, or I could suggest that next month we're coming to the Planning and Development Committee to talk about all of our corridor stuff, and we can bring it up there to brief the entire board. But that was the process that we were going through, is one, we want to do a demo. What's the goal for that demo? If it is a successful route, it gets funded based on the board adopted policies, and I apologize that they're not in here.
I would think that it would be better to come back and have the board briefed on that entire piece so that we can feel comfortable that we've met it, because I think that was one of the concerns that we had raised before.
Okay. We'll do that with our priority corridor plan in about a month. You'll see.
I do think one of the points that Ms. Hudgens made that's important for those of us that do the kind of quick assessment that I did, where I said, gee, are we going to be able to fund this in Maryland in a year and a half? It does help to know that, yes, this will be a regional route, and this is why. And that's, but you did a wonderful job in responding to all of the things that we said, please define this stuff so we don't get caught later and not have a plan for how these things progress. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now ready to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And this one passes unanimously. Action item B, District of Columbia. This is eliminate service on Route 98. Is there
Chairman,
a motion?
I move the elimination.
Second. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded.
Any Chairman, let me just say that I'm doing this in the interest of moving us along here. We've had a hearing on this, and we do have, it's the intention of the District of Columbia to move the 98 into the DC circulator system in a new route, limited stop, which will serve various communities from Woodley Park right to McPherson Square. And we think it's going to be a very contributing route in terms of the 14th Street congestion. You can see the strategy here is to address congestion, bus bunching on 16th Street, the same thing on 14th Street, and provide very significant new service. Of course, the DC circulator will be, as was the 98, fully funded by the District of Columbia. And there's some $800,000 available in FY10 will be, of course, withdrawn and applied to the DC circulator.
It's
so I think
any
I'm
other comments?
This.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This one also passes unanimously. Number C is, again, a District of Columbia item. This is for the purchase of additional buses for the
Chairman,
circulator.
I move approval, but I would like to comment.
Okay, let me see if I can get a second first. Is there a second? Anybody second this one?
Second.
Okay. This item raises several very basic questions for the District of Columbia. And starting with, this involves the Georgetown Blue Bus. And the first question is whether or not we should be replacing those buses with DC circulator buses. The second question is, where is the money coming from? And the third question relates to issues surrounding the DC circulator itself and how we're expanding the DC circulator and how all of this. We have some very good information from the mayor on these issues, but it's not quite complete. But I think at this point, Mr. Chairman, we are prepared to see this go forward. We have 2 weeks to continue to gather data and information on this before it's the subject of a vote at the board. And so we're not quite there yet, but I think that we're prepared to see it moved to the committee.
And I just have a question. And the question is, we're moving, Metro will make this purchase, but the funds will be coming from the district.
It's entire, 100% district.
And is it just simply a contract rider, or what, why the process there versus?
Because we have funds on account with Metro, the details of which I would be glad to give you, even though there's still questions surrounding where the money is coming from.
So they are actually funds that are DC funds?
That's right.
And that, and they're not coming into Metro, but they are already present here?
They're here.
Okay, and we will see that.
But there's no fiscal impact on any other jurisdiction. And, but we, in the DC delegation, we have questions concerning this, but because there may be an advantage by indicating our interest in purchasing these buses before the end of February, there is an urgency about this, which we may or may not wish to be bound by. But I think for present purposes, we can go ahead.
Mr. Graham, my understanding here is that you're transferring $850,000 from the circulator operating account to the capital account. And you're saying the other $900,000 is on account here, but is not part of that. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So are we ready for a vote? Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Another unanimous vote. Our next item is to modify the credit line and issue Metro Matters bonds. Ms. Kissel.
I agree.
In November, at the November FAO committee meeting, we actually talked about the capital financing plan as it was structured under Metro's Matters, which is a six-year capital plan. Now that we're coming towards the end of that funding agreement, which expires next year at the end of fiscal year 2010, we are actually in the position of looking at how we currently take our short-term debt that we currently have in place that has funded those capital investments to long-term debt. And that's the goal of this presentation. If you see in this first page here, this actually addresses the $2.75 billion investment plan. That's the total of Metro Matters funding. This is actually where we've spent those dollars in infrastructure renewal primarily and in rolling stock procurements and rehabilitation of the infrastructure. The assumed financing expense there is actually a financing expense that we've assumed as a result of funding those investments with short-term commercial paper. Next chart. This actually shows actually the what's happened now. Now this is more of a where the funds are actually deriving from. The funds, most of them are federal grant funds that we receive from the FTA, formula funds, and as well as the matching participation from the appropriate jurisdictions. And then we have some level of internal sources that we have funded our capital plan with. At the end of the day, we have a debt amount of $488 million, which we are currently have funded with commercial paper short term. And that is the debt number that we are looking to fund with long-term debt. This chart actually just goes through our existing commercial paper facility that has been approved by the board. It's capped at $330 million, backed by these two banks. We currently have an outstanding balance of $315 million, and it expires consistent with the Metro Matters Agreement, which is the end of fiscal year 2010. We also have a $100 million line of credit. Again, primary bank is Wachovia, and currently we have no outstanding borrowings on that. So what we're recommending to the board here in anticipation of taking out the short-term debt to the long-term debt, we are requesting the board two recommendations. One is to increase the line of credit to the capacity of $250 million from $100, which actually would provide us with some interim capital room, if you will, to the extent we have a difficult time placing our bonds, which I don't anticipate. But it actually is a course of action, which I think is a conservative course of action. We actually have talked to some banks in the market who are looking to anticipate, who are providing us this credit capacity. So we already have information from a consortium of banks that are looking to increase the line for us. We are also looking to use that line of credit in anticipation of smoothing out some capital and operating cash flows that we don't anticipate, but we'd like to have that ability. The $550 million bond issue is actually bigger than the $488 million debt, only because this is the cap level. Because there's no bond insurance in the market any longer, we issue bonds, I want to say naked. There's no insurance any longer in the market, and as a result, we potentially might have the request to have a debt service reserve fund, which could potentially bump up the bond issue to 550. That's the maximum cap that we're looking at. I think it's going to be a lot lower than that. We will pay down the commercial paper. It'll also clear us the final debt issue. It'll be the final debt issuance to Metro Matters Agreement. We actually have met with the rating agencies, the general manager and myself, and our new treasurer, and we actually, in anticipation of this bond issue, in order to get a clarification as to how they assess our current debt rating. Currently, we're at an A minus with S&P and an A1-2 with Moody's. We're looking actually to get a bump up of that credit rating, and we actually spent some time in New York talking to the rating agencies about that prior to the issue. That actually bump up could save us 20 or 30 basis points potentially in an offering like that, which could translate into $1 million or maybe $2 million in lower debt service over the term of the debt. Part of the Metro Matters funding agreement was an opportunity for the jurisdictions to opt in or opt out. Next page. What this actually means is the jurisdictions can fund the debt themselves through their own bond issuances of their states, and then pay us a cash payout at the end of the year or when required. Or they can opt into the debt, meaning that they could have Metro Matters issue the debt, which we're prepared to do, given that the board gives us the direction, and then we would issue the offering and they would pay the debt service. In anticipation, we have actually met with each one of the jurisdictions, the district, Northern Virginia, and as well as Maryland, to make them aware of this. They have been aware of it over the last several, you know, last year. We were updating them as to how, now that we're getting closer to fiscal year 2010, they are looking at options to opt in or opt out at this time, and we anticipate sending them a formal communication at the end of March based upon the direction we received from the board, asking, you know, if they're looking to opt in or opt out. And they will do their own pricing formulas based on that. I think the direction that we've received from the district is that they would probably opt, I forget what opt-in. Opt-in actually means that given the district's debt capacity, that they would prefer us to issue the bonds and that they have already planned for the debt service in their budgets. Maryland, we're waiting for analysis, and Northern Virginia, I think, might be a combination of both. So this recommendation actually is to increase the line of credit in anticipation of the issue, and also give us the approval to start the process of placing, putting together a package for issuing bonds late spring or early summer.
Commenting on Maryland, given the budget issue that I reflected upon earlier, I suspect we're going to opt in. Okay. I'd like to comment briefly on this. If you may remember, about a year and a half ago, staff came to us with a proposal to do essentially this kind of thing. And I was extremely negative at the time for two reasons. One, that the number was close to $700 million. And, second of all, there was no need to do it at that point. There's no question in my mind that now there is a need to do it. And there are, in fact, two parts to this. The $700 million basically relates to the $488 million that we're talking about now. That's a pretty reasonable number looking at all of the activities that are going on here. That's the Metro Matters number, and as Ms. Kissel stated, the difference between that and the 550 is the potential for a debt service reserve, which you would have to have if you can't get bond insurance, which we've always had in the past, but there is no such thing anymore. So that's, you know, we could be anywhere between the 488 and the 550, depending upon what the real costs turn out to be. The other part, the $250 million line of credit, is an interesting requirement, and you'll notice in this that this covers both capital and operating. And this is something that is the effect of decisions that get made at various times for various reasons. And this really, more than anything else, is the result of the board itself requesting that the authority go from an obligation basis for its bookkeeping to an expenditure basis for its bookkeeping. What used to happen was whenever the capital program was ready to go, before any contract was let, we gave them all the money for it, we in the federal government. The result being that there was a substantial amount of cash sitting around that could be used for flexible purposes. Now, in any business, you know that you start up with some working capital. You got to have some money that carries you through the ups and downs of the business. But that never happened for Metro. When it started up, nobody gave it any working capital. All it ever got was enough to run the next day. And so Metro essentially created its working capital by using the obligations of funds that came in early and using those to cover the various costs that accrued until the money was actually needed to be expended. That's not happening anymore. We're only giving Metro the money when it's actually expended or close to when it's actually expended. The result being that they have no flexibility anymore. And basically, the $250 million provides them that working capital, the ability to deal with the unexpected differences, the delays in funds coming in, and things like that, that you need to, inevitably, in an organization like this. So we are now doing something that we have never done in the past, but it is effectively the result of a decision that the board itself made. So I'm very supportive of what goes on here. Are there any other comments?
I just have a factual question. Could you, do you happen to have with you the, on page 76 of the presentation, could you give us a breakdown of the participating jurisdictions, specifically for the contribution in 10 and 9? If you don't have that, can you break down the 917 by jurisdiction?
Yes, the contributions for 10, actually, for the district specifically, are one. We have an actual chart which we can actually provide to each to each of the board members. But the District of Columbia for 2010 anticipated debt is $201 million, rounding. In terms of debt service anticipation for that, we're assuming about $15 million a year for debt service.
$15 million in 10?
Yes, that's correct. In 2009, actually, the district actually pays a portion of the interest that's assigned to it as a result of the commercial paper issuance. So I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's relatively small.
Can you just continue on for 10, just so I...
So with the other jurisdictions? For Maryland, actually, the dollar amount total would be $197 million, and the anticipated debt service would be $14.7 million. In terms of Alexandria, it's $24.4 million and debt service of $1.8. I can go through the jurisdictions if you want. Arlington, $47.7 million, debt service of $3.6. City of Fairfax, $1 million, debt service anticipated at $78,000. Fairfax County, $76.4 million, debt service at $5.7 million. And so the total of Virginia would be $151 million in terms of opt-out, but the debt service on that is assumed at $11.3
million. Thank you.
Let me just clarify. All of the debt
I'm sorry.
Service.
I forgot Falls Church. I apologize. Falls Church is $1.5 million. I apologize. And the debt service, that is very nominal, $115 million.
Now, let me clarify just so that I understand. The debt service effectively is within the line item for financing in the Metro Matters program.
Yes, that's correct.
And so it's already calculated as part of our contribution.
And the debt service that I'm quoting here are very pro forma debt service. They are based on a higher rate, about a 5.5%, which we anticipate when we do issue. If the markets are favorable, we could get something that's lower. So. Okay.
Actually, Metro Matters provides for bump up to take into account the additional debt service running issue.
But the grand total debt service, I believe, is higher than what we've ever expended by quite a bit.
I'm sorry.
I thought that the debt service line item was substantially higher already than anything we've expended.
That could be the case, but I'm saying in the agreement that we're going to anticipate a bump up, maybe the amount of debt will not require that.
I think the way it works right now is if there's a bump up, it's pretty minimal. But could you get back to us on that?
Like, we can get back to you on that.
It would affect us in 2010.
And actually, what will happen, too, is we have bonds that are reaching retirement. So escalator bonds that we issued in 93 and then some other bonds in early 2000, those are actually retiring in 2010. So there will be an offset on debt. And that'll feed through each of the jurisdictions. So we'll be providing that specific analysis in March when we communicate to each one of the jurisdictions formally on the opt-in and opt-out provisions.
So if any of these jurisdictions determined that they could not make a Metro Matters contribution for FY10, number one, is that possible? And number two, what would be the consequences of that in terms of the overall contributions to Metro Matters?
I don't have that. Carol, is that in terms of Metro Matters agreement, the commitment on debt funding?
The consequences would be very great.
Okay.
But the other jurisdictions, what would be the impact on the responsibility of the other jurisdictions to contribute?
Well, as far as the Metro Matters agreement, they're obligated to contribute either the debt service or the opt-out provision. So they would either fund it themselves and provide us that payment or provide the debt service.
Even though there might be one or more other jurisdictions who were not making the contribution?
I believe, is that correct, Carol? I don't want to make a misstatement.
Well, complicated matter, but the jurisdictions agreed when they signed the Metro Matters agreement that part of the financial plan was the issuance of debt, and the exercise on the two railcar options was made with that understanding. So I don't have a rundown of where we are with funds available now, but we have to issue takeout debt to pay for the obligations we have already incurred. So if a jurisdiction cannot pay, there will be very great consequences for the report.
Just another point, that actually we would, before we issue the debt, actually we would have to confirm the prior commitment of the jurisdictions. That would be part of the debt offering, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question regarding the trip to the rating agencies, and you said that you had A-minus from S&P, right?
Yes.
And you went to Moody's as well, and we're looking for a bump up. How promising? Did you get any signs of encouragement?
We got good encouragement from Moody's, which we were expecting,
okay.
And S&P somewhat. Slightly different, but they have different methodologies the way they evaluate. So we actually came away from that with a good feeling from that. One of the things that they talk about when they look at Metro, they evaluate us a little differently because obviously we're not funded through dedicated sales tax as other transit properties are throughout the country. So one of the things that they ask about constantly is, you know, your subsidy trend, how is that, your commitments on the jurisdiction, how does that work? And actually, we have a very, very good historical reference because over the last 30 years, Metro has been subsidized on a yearly basis. And that actually is a positive statement. Of course, you know, given the economic times, we're not hit by the negative fluctuation of the sales tax like other transit properties are, where I should say we benefit because we have jurisdictions who support that. So that is looked on as a good thing, and I would think that Moody's and S&P both indicated that they'd like to see that move forward as we go through Metro Matters 2, the commitment on behalf of the jurisdictions. And that's how they'd look at us.
Mr. Chair, two issues. One, when we were back in New York, they did comment this was the first time in a long time, and I'm not sure how many years, the Metro has come to them to really lay out our financial situation and to request this upgrade. So they thought that was good. That was a positive reaction from them. I'm not sure if that's going to give us that increase or that improvement, but at least it was a positive action. The second issue, I just want to address something that Mr. Graham asked concerning the consequences of an agency not or jurisdiction not funding its Metro Matters obligations. There are serious consequences, but we do need to look at our expenditure rate and what's been contributed for, and there are provisions in the agreement that states very clearly if the payments aren't made, what the consequences are from a penalty standpoint, an interest standpoint. So there are some provisions. We might want to give you a little bit more detail on that at the next meeting.
Thank you, Mr. General Manager. Any other comments? Are we prepared to vote on? Never got a motion on this one, I don't believe. Do you have any record that we had a motion? I don't think so.
No.
Do we have a motion?
Second.
Mr. Albert and seconded by Ms. Hewlett. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Another unanimous one. And our next action item.
Mr. Chairman, can I didn't get a chance to actually introduce the Metro's new treasurer, and I wanted to do that. I apologize. Raj Srinath, and actually he came from the district and as well as Amtrak, and I've worked with him for many years, and he's we're happy to have him. So.
Thank you. Thanks, Helen. And glad to be here. Thank you.
Our next item is the Clarendon Station subrecipient grant agreement. I wonder if we want to just move this item.
On a motion, I'll make one.
Absolutely.
Move the recommendation.
Second.
It's moved and seconded. Are there any questions about this one? This one is a shift of already granted federal funds to Arlington. Mm-hmm. If there are no questions, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All unanimous. Okay. We are now going back to item 3, which is our budget review. Since we have a couple of board members here who were not here at the very beginning, let me repeat in a little bit less detail and extent what we agreed to in terms of the meaning of this activity. We are not planning to make any changes to the budget. We're making suggestions only. We're just saying these are areas that we think need to be looked at, and perhaps the size of the area of each area we are focusing on. Everything other than service or fares, we don't want to get into the issue of service, which none of us really wants to make any service changes anyway. We want to see what we can do before that happens so that we can minimize the degree to which we have to go out for any hearings on service changes. So the decisions we make here are all ones where we are recommending that the staff go back, look at what it is that we're suggesting. It can be a number in an area, but we want to get their response, their thoughtful response, before we make any final decisions, and we all agreed to that process.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Yule.
Yeah, question. Agenda item 4 says motion for executive session, budgetary matters, personnel matters, contract matters. Someone clarify a budgetary matters, why we're doing
that. These are essentially things that relate to the labor agreement and therefore are ones that can't talk about.
Is it labor personnel?
It's contractual maybe, but
contractual. I just don't want us to go in exec session to talk about things that are not personnel matters, contractual matters, are indeed budgetary matters, because budgetary matters are not supposed to be discussed in executive session, and I will not participate in such a discussion in executive session.
The items at this point that are for the executive session are those that, if discussed in open session, would relate to negotiations and arbitration strategies, okay, and therefore probably would be inappropriate in public session.
Thank you.
Shall we start on item 3, please?
Okay. In the booklets that we handed out, if you look at the tab dated February 12th, Last time we were together was January 29th at that work session. Based upon a lot of the discussions and questions, we've prepared a package that hopefully addresses some of those, and we anticipate having, obviously, further discussion. Also, in anticipation of some of the discussion we had last meeting, where we wanted to have a crosswalk of what we have been doing in terms of scrubbing the budget and then having work sessions and where we are now, we actually put together this table. The initial budget development on the 29th of January assumed a subsidy baseline of the $535 million, which is consistent with the direction that we have, that no increase of subsidy. As a result, we had estimated a budget gap at that time of 100.
There's no number. Nobody can figure out where you are.
It's under the tab February 12.
February 12.
Page 6 in the handout.
I apologize.
Six in the handout.
Also in here.
Okay.
February 12th tab, and then the...
Must have a February 12th.
I do. I just don't have anything behind it.
Oh, yeah. The packages got bound incorrectly, it appears.
Yeah.
Our shoe dates got bound behind...
Trying to help me, but I appreciate it. All right.
Behind the January 8th. Imagine behind the February 12th.
Behind January.
In the black and white version, it would be page 6 of the black and white agenda package.
He has it now. We all have it.
Okay.
Just in the wrong place.
Okay.
And no numbers.
Does everyone have that page?
Yes, I got bound correctly.
What's the notebook different from this?
It's nothing. We did the notebook because we wanted to actually have the board have each one of the presentation discussions that we have had from January 8th, January 29th, and then today. Yeah.
So this is an appendix, basically.
This book.
That's what this package is.
This is what they mean by the notebook.
No, I think
this is all presentations to date, including this one, and their intent is to continue to do that through the end of our discussion so we can always refer to various different presentations that were made previously and say, you said this time.
Okay, and so the ring binder was for what?
Ring binder is just the standard ring binder.
Well, we need to get away from the standard ring binder. There's too much paper here.
Yeah, one or the other.
So we get the documents delivered at home this thick, we get a brown notebook with all of this, and then we get this. We're going to be cross-cutting. Stop. We need to cut back on.
Well, we did suggest that one of the things we do is at the end of this meeting, we leave these here so that they can bind the next one in and they don't recreate the entire document and fill some retreats.
That's fine. Okay.
So we're on page 6, budget adjustment.
Yes. And as I was saying, at the last meeting, we wanted to have a crosswalk of where we were from there to where we are now. And that initial budget meeting that we had on the 29th, we assumed a baseline subsidy of $535 million, no increase next year. As a result, we had originally estimated a budget gap, as you see on the columns, baseline changes of $176 million. That's what we presented on the 29th of January. $17 million of that was an impact to revenue, and I'll discuss the impacts on revenue later in this presentation. And the other impact was actually 159 of it was expense. At the time, we assumed that we could take a reduction in the positions, which we had discussed at the time, of $103 million on the January 29th presentation, and that we could take that reduction in positions, which would result in that $103 million salary cost reduction. The balance would then have to result in a potential analysis on service level changes. As we have gone further today to develop plans for this administrative cuts that we are currently making in the next few weeks and further scrubbing those numbers, we realized that we had assumed too much of a reduction based upon some incorrect assumptions and in terms of salary step increases and other. And as a result, we have brought that number of $103 million down to the number that realizes an $81 million reduction. And that's the difference between the $176 million. We've scrubbed out $22 million because of an error in assumptions on salary increases, step increases that are contractually committed, and now we are looking at a budget gap of $154 million.
Before you go to the next page, thank you. That gets us from, that was the question that I asked last time was,
yes.
You know, how did we get from 176 to 154? And if I understand correctly, it's because essentially of an error in the personnel area that was a $22 million error, and we can therefore reduce the the amount that we're trying to get by $22 million. I noticed that in the previous presentation, the general manager said, well, he'd find a way to deal with $103 million worth of the cuts, and the rest was going to have to come out of service. The question I ask is, since our priority is not to cut service, why don't we apply the $22 million to the service and still do the $103 million worth of cuts to the administrative end?
And there are areas in this presentation, as we go through it, to talk about the specific expense areas and why some of those expense areas are increasing. There is opportunity for the board to make that decision. Yes.
Well, I guess as just a starting point, I think
that.
As a starting point of this discussion, it seems like we ought to take the $22 million and move it over one column and say, instead of $73 million worth of service cuts, we really only have to make 51, and there's $103 million that you said you could make, and you still will.
Maybe I can help clarify. We didn't have a list worth of $103 million. There was flat out a $22 million mistake in a spreadsheet. We have a list worth $81 million. There's 313 positions being eliminated and a whole host of non-personnel costs being eliminated. We have a very granular, detailed list worth $81 million. It was just a mathematical mistake in an Excel spreadsheet worth $22 million. So the 103 is just a wrong number.
When you presented it to us, how did you expect to get to 103? You're the ones that made the split.
It was a mistake. It was just a mistake.
And the 103, as Rick had indicated, further scrubbing revealed that. What has not changed is the administrative cuts that the general manager has indicated, which is the over 300 positions that we communicated on the 29th. Some of those are vacant, and some of those are filled. So those 300 positions we are moving on eliminating, and some of them are filled positions. That has not changed. But the dollars associated with that is not $103 million. It's $81 million, and that is really what's happened. If the board wants us to look at an additional $22 million in cuts elsewhere, we would have to go back and look at that.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, I get that somebody made a mathematical, arithmetical error. That happens. The question is which way it accrues. I mean, if you're saying we overestimated this from the savings from a cut we were going to make, that would be one thing. But that wouldn't make your problem smaller. Your gap would be just as big as it was before. You just have a harder time getting there. If you're saying we overestimated, a cost item, and so the gap is smaller, then that's what Mr. Benjamin thought it was. But I don't understand how both these things can be true. You can't both have discovered that a cut you were going to make doesn't yield as much in savings and have a smaller gap to make.
It literally happened at about 10:30 at night upstairs in a conference room inside a PowerPoint presentation.
I don't care how it got made. I'm just saying it's either in column A or it's in column B. It's either to the good or it's to the bad.
It
can't be both.
It was basically a circular reference inside a spreadsheet, and it was just a flat-out mathematical mistake that we didn't pick up because we were upstairs late one night and we missed it, and it got into a presentation in front of the board of directors.
It both reduces the size of the gap the agency faces and the savings from an administrative cut.
Yes. It was just complete mathematical.
Right, it's neutral. That's exactly what
it is. Starting point, we can ignore all that and just give us the bottom line in terms of the starting point of that difference.
I have an enormous problem with that explanation. We were told, and also the next thing that you said, Ms. Kissel, because it makes me wonder why we're bothering. We were told that there were $103 million worth of cuts that one way or another you were going to make, and that we now had to focus on what we had to do with the remaining $73 million, which you believe should come from service. Now, a lot of what we're doing at this moment is we're going through the budget, and we're saying, okay, here are additional cuts that we think we need, we think perhaps you could make, so that there'll be even less service that we have to potentially cut. Yet, what I thought I heard you saying is, oh, well, there's more stuff in here, and when we do those are all going to go in the administrative column. Well, I mean, if that's the case, why are we bothering? You're telling us we have no choice but $73 million worth of service cuts? I don't buy that.
In the January 29th presentation, actually, if you recall, and I don't have the chart here, but it's in your pamphlets, we actually looked at the baseline budget, and we had a $22 million plug number in the column under expenses that said other, because when we were actually scrubbing the numbers, we realized we had an issue in our salary expense, and we didn't quite know what it was. So actually, we put that number in the January 29th presentation. If you go back, you can see that. It was $22 million. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. I remember the 22 was right. The bottom of the page, right. A single line that said other.
Right.
But I don't see that it necessarily should apply in the column that you're applying it. Mm-hmm. And it's not clear to me what good it does for this board to try and find additional reductions unless what we're doing is reducing the demand or the need for service reductions. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we're all about right now. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do service reductions. Mm-hmm. So if there's a secret list of, you know, what it is that you're going to do anyway, then aren't we just wasting our time reproducing your secret list?
There is no secret list.
Okay, so where's the list? Do you want to give it to us?
Which list are you speaking of, Mr. Chair?
Well, what I thought I heard from Rick, Mr. Harkin, was that there's this $81 million that you have defined down to the last.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Oh, yes, we have that.
So are any of those, presumably those are things that some of which we're going to find here, and then you're going to say, oh, well, that's part of the $81 million. Well,
no, that $81 million has been removed from the budget that this committee is considering. So the 313 positions have been removed from the expense, personnel expense line item, and the layoff notices are being processed.
Okay, let me suggest where I am and see where this committee is. I would like to just move the $22 million over and leave that as a problem for the general manager and say, we don't want to cut service by that $22 million. We originally had 103 that general manager was going to find 103.
Yes, ma'am, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cato.
Either way you move these numbers, the end result is going to be the same. If you're asking me to find $22 million more in administrative reductions, I don't know. You know, we've not taken a look at that. But then I need to bring a list of what we will not do. I mean, that is an option, and that is a decision by the board. But to make an additional $22 million reduction purely on the administrative side, am I speaking of some other expenses we can look at, but purely on the administrative side and not look at any reductions whatsoever that touches service, there will be things we can't do.
Well, I must admit that I've gone through this budget, and it is my intent as we go further to highlight areas where I thought there might be some room for reductions. Hopefully those aren't ones that would go into your $22 million. But it seems that they're probably more than I was able to find just going through this stuff last night. What is the desire of the committee?
Can I ask a question just for clarification?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Yule.
All right. I'm going to bring my accountant's hat and see if I can understand this. The original gap was 176.
Mm-hmm.
And the $22 million correction brings us up to 154.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you propose to resolve the 154 is $81 million in administrative cuts, which is primarily personnel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the balance of that, which is $73 million, is service cuts.
Exactly,
so that's
correct.
The 154.
Correct.
That's correct.
So if I understand what the chairman is asking or suggesting, or indicating, is that to get, I'll leave it at that. I understand that, but I'll leave it at that.
Ms. Hutchins.
I think we'd all be better if we could walk back through the 29th, because I think that's the problem. And if I can, and I'm going back to the 29th presentation. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going back to the 29th. Yes. And you produced a list on page 12. Is that the list where you have both the baseline budget, the reductions that you've taken by? Is that correct?
Yes, that's actually the list. That's correct.
And so what has happened is that you gave us this list.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and I think we asked a question about it last time because we were all befuddled by the numbers. I'm trying to find the other that you added in the 22.
The 22. Oh, that's, is that in this presentation?
That's on the previous one.
It's on the previous presentation, January 8th.
Okay.
Page 14.
Right.
look at page 14 on the January 8th presentation, where we have, on the baseline forecast, we have an item called other.
And this is the error that
this
has
is,
a...
Right. At the time we presented
no
it.
No associated cuts to go with it.
Correct.
Yes, that's correct. And that's the exposure.
And, and we have some questions on that last.
Then move to page 19. Mm-hmm. Those numbers, which are the top of the presentation we have right now. At that point, the general manager said, and $103 million is going to come out in something other than service, and $73 in service. Either they already knew that there was $22 million that they could cut, and they just put it in other and took it back out again, or there must have been some other plan to get to 103.
No,
sorry, just a mistake.
Well, let me just say, on that same presentation on January 8th, where the general manager spoke about the $103 million reduction in administrative operational expenses, on page 17, what the general manager is, what the plan was to do staffing reduction, which eliminates this 891 positions. Now, when we looked at the 891 positions, 300 of them were associated with what we were calling administrative non-service related positions. The other 700 or so were service related positions. So it is consistent that the general manager was consistent in looking at the 300 positions to eliminate, but the dollar amount that was valued to that was incorrect. It is $81 million, not the 103. And as a result, we've been trying to explain that there's no separate list. Certainly, if the board gives us direction to reduce $22 million in addition to administrative expenses, we can do that. We can look at that. But we're not prepared to have that. We don't have that list currently.
Well, I certainly am of the opinion that at that point, it was very clear to me, at least, that you somehow felt that you could do $103 million. And you put it under the label administrative cuts, and you said none of this is direct service cuts. None of this will affect service. So there must be some way to do that. So at least tentatively, I would say, let's ask you to do 103 and show us what's going to happen.
And we can do that, Mr. Chair, but the reason I said 103 was because I had a number that had a $22 million error in it. I mean, so I was communicating an error to you.
Either you knew that on the 9th and you were misleading us, or
no,
you
we
didn't know that. I presume
you,
it was the latter.
Aye.
I mean, on that date, there was that line item in there, yeah, agreed, but you thought you had to do the full 176. And you did the split at that point. Are there any other comments? What's the will of the committee? Do we have any consensus at all?
I guess I'd want to wait and hear more.
I'm sorry, Ms.
I'd be inclined to wait and hear more before figuring that out.
Okay, do you want to go farther through this and then come back and hit this later?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's move on. Let's go through the report. We can revisit this later.
Okay.
Spend all day.
On to page 7?
Yes, okay.
Are we back on the 12th?
Yes, we're back on the 12th presentation on page.
We have no page numbers.
Oh.
It's page 7 in the handout.
Oh, he has this one.
It's this chart
the
here.
The one that says Bridget Crosswalk.
Okay. On the top, yeah, it's the second chart. On the top of this chart, we actually list what the current approved budget is, revenue expense for 09. And then we actually do a little bit of a crosswalk on what's happening to revenue as a result of our assumptions for the next year. Given the assumptions that we're seeing on ridership this year, we've planned for, we're looking at ridership that's a 3% increase in Metro Rail and on bus. We actually planned something lower than that, 2%. So as a result, we're actually increasing our revenue projections by $19 million for revenue and bus. And that actually is an increase from 3% growth that we're actually seeing now and planning a growth of more like 4%. So that is the $19 million that you see there. The adjustment that we make is the mid-year fare increase that was actually approved by the board and implemented last year, the $109 million fare increase revenue. Partially we took last year, And then the other part, we're actually taking under board policy this next year. So that would actually reduce, not on a cash basis, but on a budget basis, the revenue projections. So when you look at the proposed budget for revenue, we're actually recommending a budget basis for revenue of $770 million for the revenue number. And we'll go into detail in further in this presentation on revenue detail by bus and by mode.
Okay. The $19 million in, under A, mm-hmm. that's what you're referring to, is the fact that you've revised upwards your estimate of ridership, which has a revenue impact this year.
That's correct.
In the current
fiscal That's year. Correct. That's correct.
Right. Are you saying also that you're thereby changing your projection for next year?
Yeah, but we actually assumed a budget this year of 2%
right.
for rail.
You're getting 3.
We're getting 3, so
what's
we're assuming
for 10?
4%.
And what was it a month ago when you first presented a budget? Are you saying this is what you're...
This is the same. The revenue assumptions have not changed.
So you're saying we thought we were going to get 2, we got 3. Suppose we get 4 next year.
Right.
Okay, might that be an optimistic assumption?
Yes.
Why would we do that?
I think we're trying to accommodate and capture the growth that we're seeing in the trend in the industry for Metrorail.
Let me ask you, I mean, you know, you're picking a guess any way you do it, and picking the bigger number makes our job easier. The real question I have, I mean, to some degree these things are exogenous. We just, you know, have to make our best guess on them. But to some degree they're based on what we do. In an environment in which you're reducing service, are you likely to get on the optimistic end of what can happen to passengers?
This assumes no reduction in service levels. What we're taking you through is just clear assumptions on revenue without any service reductions.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, so if we were doing a
Mr.
budget.
Mr. Zimmerman, if I may interrupt. They do, in fact, go through this in a fair amount of detail and get to the issues that you're talking about a little bit later. You may want to just wait until they get there, unless you want to just skip to that page now and come back.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I did want to comment that this presentation is very good because it clarifies an issue which I think a lot of people were confused about, which is, in fact, we are getting more riders. More riders are getting us more revenue. That means that our passenger revenue next year is going to be higher than our passenger revenue this year, even if we do some service cuts.
Right.
But that we had a one-time only chunk of money in there, $36 million, which overwhelmed that increase. So it isn't like there's a $17 million reduction in passenger revenues that we're getting. We're getting a $19 million increase offset by a one-time only mm-hmm. application of funds. And many of you are aware, I hate the one-time onlys because
right.
they get us into these kinds of situations where you're constantly trying to fill holes.
Mm-hmm.
With one-time-only funds.
That was actually the next thing I was going to mention, and my question was going to be, since that's not something discovered, the change in ridership is a new piece of information, but since we knew going into it that the budget was built on this one-time, non-repeating, you know, money, therefore a hole that was in it, in what sense does that offset anything? That was already a hole we were in. We knew that going in.
Right, and it was something that, what, 3 years ago, we put in $60 million?
2 years ago, just over 2 years ago, was $40
million. Okay. We put in $40 million, then we had to fill the $40 million, and that was one-time only capital funds.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we had to fill that hole, so we did a one-and-a-half-year fare increase and saved half a year of it. That was 36 of the 40. Now we're back one more time trying to fill that same hole, and you do this over and over and over again, unless you can make structural changes instead of finding one-time sources. And at some point, we've got to fix this budget and make it work right. What essentially is happening now is we're saying, well, let's solve that problem by cutting service. And that doesn't seem very acceptable.
The other item, actually, that's compounding that issue is the expense side. And that's the next column over on this chart, which looks at some of the expenses. As I talked about last time we met, most of our expenses, a good portion of them, are obviously labor costs, and probably more than 80% of those labor costs are contractually committed. So that's what we call these uncontrollable types of expenses, and as well as other expenses, just the cost of materials and things are rising. So on the revenue side, we have constraints. We have them as well as the on the expense side as well. This is just an overall review on the revenue assumptions that we, which you already know, no fare increase. We talked about the ridership growth, which we've embedded in here. We actually have looked at the full year impact of these three items, balance transfer, and then the discontinuation of the budget fare integration and the elimination of paper transfer. Balance transfer, we're actually looking at a net loss of about $4 million in the that the impact of the balance transfer, we're forecasting this. This, again, was a policy that we made to get parity between rail and bus that the board had made. And as a result of that, we're anticipating we're going to have a loss to rail revenue because of the implications of the discount. We incurred, folks would have a 90-cent discount, and now it's 50 cents. So we'll have that loss, but we'll have a gain to the bus revenue. But when you net those out, we'll also have a loss as well. And I have actually a chart that explains it, but I don't have it up here. If I looked at bus, there's a $4.5 million increase in bus revenue because of the parity that we've included in the discounts between bus and rail. And then the rail discount, which was 90 cents and now is 50 cents, that actually is going to impact revenue in a negative about $9 million. So when you net the two, that's about a $4 million loss to our bottom line on revenue.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, now I have a question.
I would suggest you turn to page 12 if you want to talk about this subject.
I don't know what page 12 is since my presentation
doesn't
have numbers.
About it.
It doesn't have numbers, so I can't
tell.
Please
go ahead.
But the question is, the between rail and bus is irrelevant because all we care about here is the bottom line. How much less money is Metro making out of any of this? And the answer is, I believe, the difference of a nickel, right? Because we rounded down the transfer when we made it balance.
So you're dying.
It's a dime, probably.
Okay, a dime.
90 cents to a dollar.
But it doesn't sound like the proportions that we just heard make any sense. That
no, actually, if you look at that table that I was just referring to,
is it the one
on the
screen?
Doesn't make sense to me either.
Yeah.
If you look on page 12, let's follow up your issue.
We don't have page numbers.
Okay, it's the one that says 2010. If you look in the
in that
this
one?
Book.
Yes.
Yes, that one.
Okay.
Looks like that.
I think I found it.
I had the same problem, Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay.
I looked at this and I said, there are a number of things here that are very nicely laid out, including, by the way, all of those assumptions that you were referring to earlier. And the first thing is the line, if you go with the FY10 adjustments down near the bottom, it says undo rail to bus discount, right?
Mm-hmm.
That says the bus used to lose $9,972,000 because of the fact that people transferring from rail to bus use these transfers. So
and
now
all the revenue is attributed to the rail, not to the bus ride.
Correct.
Right.
So now, you know, bus is going to not have that. And now the next step, if I understand it correctly, is you say, okay, when we do the balance transfer,
mm-hmm.
which is going to end up at about $15 million or short of that, you know, what is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
right? And I look at that and I say, all right, instead of losing $9 million, it's losing $5 million in
correct.
Bus.
Correct.
But rail is going to lose $9 million. And all we've done is we've moved it from 90 cents on the first line to a dollar on the second line, which is a tiny change. And all of a sudden, we're losing on rail as much as we lost on bus before, plus bus losing. How'd that happen?
Bus.
Go ahead.
The building block pieces are, prior to implementation of balance transfer, a customer would save 90 cents moving from rail to bus. So the first action that happens is you turn that off. So suddenly bus revenue increases because now, yes, bus revenue increases.
Got it.
The second part of that is to turn on a 50 cent transfer. So it went up $9 million and then it comes back down $5.5 million. There's a two part, there's an up and a down to that on the bus revenue equation. And that's what this is here. If all we were to do is eliminate the rail to bus discount and just not have that anymore, so then all those people who go from the railroad to the bus company would generate $9 million of additional bus revenue. But that's not what the policy was. The policy said step two of this is to have a 50-cent discount. So that's what the negative 5.5 is. So you have to net those two together to see the bus revenue impact. On the railroad, what happens is when you go from bus to rail today, there's no discount at all. In the future, when you go from bus to rail, you'll get a 50-cent discount, so rail is going to lose $9 million of revenue.
All that works, except that the total discount is going, as Mr. Zimmerman pointed out, from about $10 million to about $15 million. And the value of the discount is going from 90 cents to a dollar.
Right.
So it's a 10% difference
right.
in the discount and a 30% difference in the value of that discount.
That doesn't
seem to fit.
There's another part of this that you can't see here. There is revenue today that comes to WMATA that will now go to the local bus companies. Ride on Dash, Fairfax Connector, they're going to start getting some revenue that is on Metro's ledgers today, but it will then go to them.
Okay, and then I guess we need to know that amount to
yes.
see that this thing
goes that's the net loss to our budget here, but all the local bus budgets get an increase.
That would make sense.
So it's a zero-sum game for the region.
So you're
the customers.
That's a good portion of that difference.
Yes.
It's probably 3 to 4 million of the difference.
Right. So regionally, there's no change.
It's
just moving money from one pocket to the next.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like
it would be useful to
at some point to actually see that, so we can see the numbers then do add up. But that would make sense if the numbers.
So
it would be nice if we could get that other piece.
Okay.
It looks like it's got.
We just kind of had blinders on because this was a WMATA budget analysis.
Okay. You want to go back to page? Where were we? 8 or 9?
We can go back to the one before that. Sorry, revenue assumption. Just to close this out, the elimination of paper transfers, we've assumed a $5 million revenue increase, and that's what we have forecasted. That might change given the fact that we have more trend data when we look at March and April, and I think we're expected to come back to the board in March. I know we are, for the revenue analysis on paper transfer.
Well, let's ask a question about that, because we are right now in a situation where choosing a nice conservative number, which you've done nicely, does result in the potential that we will go out to public hearing with more service reductions than we might necessarily have to have. I remember all of you coming in when talking about paper transfers and savings we were going to get, and you quoting numbers 15 million and above. I think 15 million is probably a little extreme, but couldn't we choose a number bigger than 5, like 10?
Well, the 15 million, I think that was Boston, is that correct? And
yep.
So we assumed a $5 million. I actually don't have at this time, trend data. Can we pick a bigger number? I think that we could probably do that once we get some analysis in March, but I don't have any information on paper transfer as of now.
Well, I hate to go out to public hearing because we chose a very, very conservative number with more lines than we would need. I wonder if we could choose a higher number that we could all agree to. And again, this is a policy issue. It's perfectly reasonable to say 5 million, but my gut says it's bigger than 5 million, and I think probably yours does too. Question is, how much higher?
I think the concern that we had was whatever goes to public hearing is the max, and you can always enact something less than that. If we flip that logic and assume a lot of revenue in this budget that does not materialize, we've advertised a service reduction that might not be sufficient.
That's perfectly reasonable. The flip side of that is, to what degree do we take our constituents out there and our riders and get them all upset about potential changes that we, in fact, are doing only as a contingency and not because we really intend to do them?
Mr. Chair, if I could, my gut is the same as yours. And I think we all, from a gut standpoint, believe that the revenues are going to be greater. However, I have no facts to base that upon. That's just my gut feeling on it.
Right. And I guess the problem we face as a board and the timing that everybody's saying relative to if you go out to hearings, you got to do it soon or you won't be ready in time for it to affect the budget, is do we wait till we have a better number or do we arbitrarily adjust this thing a little bit and say, okay, we're taking a bigger chance? And there are a whole bunch of changes you make, and you take bigger or smaller chances with all of them. And the question is, how much of a bias do you get? Mr. Graham.
I just want to be clear on something. So we have numbers from Boston, which is a system of comparable size in terms of the elimination of the paper.
Comparable size, their tariff structure and everything is different, but comparable size, yes.
And that number is produced a savings of how much in Boston?
$15 million, based upon their reports.
And you think that what we have estimated is a very conservative $5 million?
Yes.
So do you think it would be irresponsible for us to increase that amount? Maybe not to $15 million, mm-hmm. but to increase it, say, to 10. I mean, is that responsible? Is within the realm of possibility?
Can I answer that? In this context, I think it might be more than 10, given that our guts are that way. But the fact is that we were pretty aggressive on our revenue estimates for rail and bus. As Mr. Zimmerman indicated, you know, the 4%, that's just really based on 1 year. And actually, it's a half a year. So we assumed 2% this year. We're seeing 3% coming in this year, and now we're budgeting 4%. So to some extent, we might be at risk already on the rail side and those assumptions. And I think that if you put more strain on it, it would be irresponsible.
But that's comparing apples and oranges. You know, I mean, can't we just stay with the apple for a moment?
If we stay with the apple, yes, we could, but we'd have to deal with the orange
later.
Yeah, we could deal with the orange later.
I mean, but it seems to me that the point that you make, Peter, or Mr. Benjamin, is a good point, that we could increase it somewhat. I think there's something here that we could do. Are we, and that raises another question that comes to mind, are we taking specific actions?
We are making suggestions for areas where perhaps the numbers could change, giving staff an opportunity to review those, and then
so
that will tell us something about what we may or may not need to do with service changes.
So that suggestion is now made.
Do we have general consensus that that's something worth doing? Okay, could you
some amount of increase.
Mm-hmm. I would just look at it as an option of looking at a higher number based upon what we have looked at here and what they see, and that becomes something that we can deal with and recognize where we need to move in the other direction.
I think we have to be helpful to staff and choose a number, because otherwise we're saying choose a number, and if they choose 100,000, we say no, that's not big enough.
Well, then the only way we can do that.
That's not what I was saying.
Okay.
You know, the only way we can do that, Mr. Benjamin, in the committee structure is to make a motion.
So either that or just see whether everybody feels comfortable with your suggestion of making it $10 million.
Well, I could move. Why don't I just move?
Okay.
Why don't I just to get through?
For the purposes of staff analysis, change this number.
Remove $10 million.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I don't have an opposition. I thought we were doing a budget workshop, so I think we'd get data back. And that's what we would work on, but that's fine with me.
This is just to give us a mechanism for saying this is one we would like to have changed.
Actually,
for the time being.
Can I clarify? Is it a $10 million increase?
No.
Or is it
up to 10?
Up to 10.
Add $5 million.
Okay.
What's next?
On the non-passenger revenue, which certainly is a smaller portion of our revenue, but just as important, we actually have the parking dollars, advertising dollars, joint fiber, and development and interest and other. In terms of parking dollar revenue, this is somewhat, we actually missing our mark on parking revenue this year. I believe actually we planned this year for 100% utilization at our lots, which is really not what we're seeing. We're seeing more of an 85% utilization in parking lots. As a result, we've planned for the lower number in revenue for the parking revenue.
Comment on that? Are you done with that item?
Yes.
Okay. You set up nicely one of the comments that I feel fairly strongly about, and that is we just did a whopping increase for the parking, and we saw what the result is. There is, in fact, some elasticity in demand for parking, and we probably have lost some degree of parking-related ridership made up in other ways. I really believe that an enormous number of people use our system on weekends because the parking is free, and many of those people then come during the week because they discover that it's a good system. So I'm very reluctant to have much consideration of charges for parking on the weekend has recently been raised, I guess, in in one of your internet discussions, because we've discovered how sensitive those parking fees do tend to be when you get them up higher. Now, I'm not saying that we want to do $4 on weekends, but even a dollar might make an enormous difference.
Mr. Chair, if I might, as I indicated in my comments on that, I did get a suggestion from one of our customers that we reviewed that, and we're in the process of doing it, but my public comment has been, I am not proposing this to the board at this time. We need to review this, so it's not part of this package.
Understood. I just wanted to have my bias known early.
But aren't we slipping into service reduction discussions?
Actually, this is fare increase reductions, but you're absolutely right, sir.
Worse even.
You are absolutely right. Are there other comments?
I just wanted to raise a comment, and I think it was the one I raised in the last budget, and that is parking fees are actually passenger costs. And when we look at the long haul of the system, that we fail to incorporate that as the larger piece. We incorporate rail, we incorporate bus, but we fail to incorporate parking. So I think we need to be clear about what we think the impact of our fare increase will be, or a non-fare increase, when we look at the imposing of the parking fees. Mm-hmm. Just a reiteration of who and how it impacts the region. It's predominantly the suburban areas, but they are not different than where there are rail stations available. Those options aren't there. So I think when we go there, we need to recognize we're still having a service impact on folks, mm-hmm. people who've made the choice mm-hmm. of using the system and only able to use it through the use of the park. Mm-hmm. So I think that imbalance we're going to have to address mm-hmm. as we go.
This is a bit out of context because we're now looking at the expense side of the parking revenue, but to some extent we are looking at internally trying to use technology. As you know, we have debit credit card readers at some of our locations. We're looking at investing in capital for all of those locations and maybe some way to actually have passenger access if they don't have debit credit cards, you know, automatically maybe at the station, which is an intercom system which lifts the gate. But in any event, that could potentially lower costs that we currently incur on contracts of having people there. So we're looking at that issue and how it impacts customers on the expense side as well. Joint development, our advertising dollars are guaranteed. We have guaranteed contracts in place for that. That's about $42 million a year for FY 2010. And then joint development and fiber optics. To some extent, we have communicated over the last month or two that we have a slight reduction in fiber optics. And we actually anticipate that there will be room to move to increase the revenue dollar amount in the fiber optics for next year. And that's dependent upon a couple of different factors. I think that will be discussed under contractual matters in the executive session. As far as joint development, we're seeing obviously the recession is hitting. We have tenants and our landlords in some areas, so we're feeling the impact of some of those vacancy rates in some of our joint development. Interest is also tied to the financial markets, and we've seen a reduction in that. The one area that we have new revenue is car sharing, but it's extremely minimal, about $56,000 for next year. On the next chart, we talk about ridership, and we just give you a view as to what the approved budget numbers were for ridership on all modes, bus, rail, and metro access. And then we've indicated this reflects the 3.5%, we rounded up to 4%, the 4% increase in the ridership for metro, rail, bus, and then obviously the 15% increase that we're seeing in metro access. The reason why the 4% is a little different here, we round up. Certainly, we have different growth rates depending upon ridership levels, peak, non-peak, weekday, and average. But when we do an average, we look at it in this respect. Revenue, this again is the revenue that's associated with those modes. And when we get to chart 12, we can talk a little bit more about revenue. But this shows the increase in revenue. Obviously, the price and volume analysis are tied. Revenue goes up. And ridership goes up. On the next chart, this is the chart that we were explaining earlier in terms of the balance transfer chart. The point, one of the points I'll make on this chart is the $13.6 million, which is under Metro Bus. This actually was the practice that we moved $13.6 million from rail to bus over the past 5 years. And obviously, with the implementation of the fare integration, we actually are not making that accounting adjustment any longer. So if we normalized for that on Metro Bus, we would probably see an average fare, which we see in 09, which is 83 cents. We would see an average fare of about 83 cents as well for fiscal year 2010, once we made that adjustment.
If I could stop you again, that's one of those examples of a one-time only that stayed forever?
That was done 12
years ago,
right,
in order to adjust for the need to hold fares on, or cost recovery actually, on bus constant. And once done, there was no way out. It was the first time we've finally been able to get that arbitrary shift out of our budget. That's why those things are very, very dangerous.
This is the fare integration.
Yeah.
Yes.
$13 million that got done 12 years ago, and it's finally gone.
You'll see the impact of this for the next half of the year, because accounting-wise, we've stopped the transfer as of this month.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. When you get to the next chart, we talk about non-passenger revenue, and these are, as I said, these are just the dollar amounts that are associated with those non-passenger revenues. As you can see, it's going down a bit, primarily due to interest, joint development, some of the recession areas that are impacted by recession. The one area that we could probably increase is the fiber optics. Right now we're looking at, because we see lower levels in fiber optics, because we have some of the recession is impacting some technology companies, small ones. But we anticipate that actually going up. So that's an area that we can actually increase based upon some further analysis that we're doing in the next month.
That has a big effect on what goes to public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
When do we get some idea as to how much that could change?
Well, we're doing that today, and actually we anticipate next meeting, which is next Thursday on the 19th, we will actually have a refresh of the direction that we're getting from the board on some of those items that we've already listed.
So you think by next week we'll have a better answer on that one?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Graham?
Can I push us back one page just briefly, not extensively? But on the subject of Metro Access, when are we going to see the numbers relating to, now I'm violating my own rules, so I better shut up. Let me at least bookmark this without discussing it. But we need to see the numbers if we simply meet the federal regulations. And so you'll have those numbers for us at some point.
We're scheduled to have them in March, but...
In March.
Yes.
But not before March. So we wouldn't have them next week when we're talking about these issues.
No, because as I mentioned to you, we were bringing in an outside organization, APTA, to do a peer review, and that process will take place on...
2nd of March.
That was the earliest that they could form that. But Kristen Kenneth's now coming up to respond to your questions.
That's okay. I mean, if that's the earliest it can be done, that's the earliest it can be done.
When we talk about operating expenses, this is an area...
The next one, can we go back one?
Yes.
This may be another one of those Excel spreadsheet things.
Oh.
If I look at this page, I see about a $2 million reduction in non-passenger revenue before we worry about whether fiber optics should be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go to page 11, I see a $23 million increase. So if I subtract $2 million from 23, I get 21.
The missing number is parking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Where's that?
It's kind of betwixt and between. The committee asked last year that we consider parking revenue in the passenger revenue category, because it's really part of the fare that you pay to ride the train. So it's been excluded from this chart as a non-passenger account. And we're decreasing the budgeted revenue for parking from one year to the next.
By how much?
That's small.
Small amount.
That's
of million.
What? Give me a sense. A small amount, 100,000 or 10 million?
It was a million.
51.
I'll have to get it for you. I don't remember.
The concern I have is that it's 21 million if I do the subtraction. On your first page, it's 19 million.
Mm-hmm. Right. The difference is the parking delta.
That's $2 million. That's a lot of loss in parking. There ought to be some growth in parking. I understand that it went down, but there ought to be some growth.
So $1.5 million reduction in the parking revenue line item from one budget to the next.
That seems pretty extreme.
Well, this
and the actuals so far this year.
About there.
We can look at that again, if that's an error, or it might be some areas of savings. We'll put it on our list.
The year-to-date is $2 million off.
Right. We're, mm-hmm. I mean, 6 months into the year, we're $2 million under budget already. So if that's annualized, that's going to be a $4 million revenue underrun in this budget. So we're talking about taking next year's revenue down, round numbers, $2 million to kind of reflect this. So there'll be some, hopefully, growth in utilization.
Okay.
The expense, from our previous meeting, we had a lot of follow-ups, obviously, on expense, which we've been talking about. And the next couple of pages, I'm going to talk through the these items. In terms of, we will look at the detail of the purchase services. In terms of the retiree health funding, we obviously assumed a dollar amount in there, $5 million, to reserve for that. That's obviously something that we can, that the board can look at. And then federal funding of operating budget, and then trends in credit and debit card. If you look at the next page.
Mr. Chair, can I ask you to go back one page to the non-passenger revenue chart? So there's an item for Southeast Garage offset that shows an increase in revenue. Can you explain that?
That's the headway cost associated with that, which we're seeing. We budgeted for 4.8, and we're showing the increase. It's due to increase.
Just general inflation and wages and parts costs. That's the inflation rate on expenses.
And is that anticipated source of revenue coming from the District of Columbia?
That's what this is.
Yes.
Chan? Oh, let me clarify a little bit of this.
You got a problem.
Right. Well, there's that issue of that discussion. Either way, we set aside monies making certain assumptions. When we've identified a site that we would begin using the capital dollars from the sale of the Southeast Garage for deadhead costs, we set aside those dollars. Either way, that there is an expense and a cost there. We can argue where the monies are coming from, whether it's from the District of Columbia or from the sale of the property, but the amount of monies are the same. If I'm making sense there. That's a different argument. The budgetary numbers will remain the same regardless of the funding source. There is an expense and there is a source of funding depending upon certain decisions where which source is going to be used.
We're happy to have a conversation with you later, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, and let me just add at the risk of that this, if this is coming from the sale of the old Southeastern bus garage, I don't think it could be accurately described as revenue. These are assets. These are monies on,
yes,
on account.
Okay.
Right.
With
I agree
the system.
With that.
If this is seen as revenue, suggesting that it might be new revenue, then this is a challenge.
That's, yes. I agree.
So depending upon how you view it, you really need to see that this line item in that line. Okay. But we're losing $3 million somewhere. Where is the loss here?
It's
interested in fiber optic?
As I indicated, fiber optics, and I indicated earlier that that is a number that we actually are looking to update probably in the next week, depending upon some decisions that are made. So that $1.5 million that we're estimating is low, and it could actually go up higher. I mean, that increase will be higher. Not the loss, the revenue increase, excuse me. So that's an area that we might be able to.
Right. I mean, Mr. Chairman, couldn't this be another area where we could see $3 million? Realistically.
Where before we do anything on service reductions, right. We need to get that new information.
Yeah, it's not only
excessively large.
We're seeing non-passenger revenue decline. It's not a lot of money, but we're looking for money.
We're looking for a dollar.
And why would it be irresponsible of us to project a same level non-passenger revenue for 10 as 9?
No, I don't think. I think we could probably make that change, but we would know better in probably the week.
But if for the purposes, again, of analysis, we do exactly what Mr. Graham suggested. Do we need a vote on that, or are we okay?
I think we should. And I will move that we project 10 proposed budget at the same level as 9 approved budget, thus having an advantage of 2.1 million.
Is there a second? No second?
Second.
You have a second, Mr. Brown. Any further? This would add 2.5 million for fiber optics, going back to the same level as this year as budget.
Oh, that's right. It is 2.0.
Mm-hmm. Actually, what you intended?
It's 3.0.
Do you want to look at anything other than fiber optics?
No. Yeah. I mean, I was using the bottom line.
Yeah.
Sorry, what is the motion, Mr. Chairman?
Well, I guess I misunderstood the motion. I thought we were talking about fiber optics, and I thought that was the answer we got.
We're discussing an information item, so I'm not sure what action.
Mr. Graham would like to know for sure when we make these suggestions.
Well, this is what we did previously.
Is this a request for information?
This is a majority of the committee.
For the purposes of, again, here's what we agreed to do. And I don't think we need formal votes for it, but this is what we agreed to do, is we're trying to find
choose numbers
and say, staff, this is where we think we differ from what this budget shows. And that would cause the budget numbers to change, and therefore the $73 million in services that we might have to cut to change. And we would then do this as a tentative set of recommendations by this committee for the staff to go back and say, you know, after the discussion we've had here and everybody said, you know, we think on balance all of these are going to work, or, you know, some of these are going to cause us a major problem and come back to us one more time after they've had time to think about it. We're not setting the final budget, but we're trying to get to the point where if we have to do service reductions, we can consider that 1 week from now.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I am not prepared to make budgetary decisions today on anything, and I certainly don't want to be making decisions piecemeal on a little fraction of it before I have the whole picture. If the goal is to send the staff back to look more closely at certain things, to present more options in some things, to reevaluate some of what they have told us, I'm fine with any of that. But I'm not going to be saying today that I think their number is wrong on something, we should change it to something else, because I don't have a basis for saying that. I won't be ready a week from now to make any decisions on service whatsoever, other than potentially deciding what things we might put out for public hearing.
That's
but I won't make
about.
Any budgetary decisions prior to a public hearing.
And I think, Mr. Zimmerman, you missed some of the early discussion in this committee where we said what we don't want to do is send excessive amounts of stuff to public hearing to get the public very concerned about things that we don't think we necessarily need to do. What we would try to do here is whittle down that $73 million number some so that we can see where we need to be next week if we have to do anything on that.
I have heard you say that, Mr. Chairman, and I think you have heard me say that I think that while in a normal year, getting a budget to go out that's pretty close to what you're going to do is a good approach. that in a year that is not normal, in which we are actually considering, we are in fact considering devastating changes to what we do here, and we may or may not have to do them, but they are real, and we don't right now know whether we are or not, that it is important that we actually bring the public into the budget process. That means they have to have before them a full list of what we're thinking about. If we pare things down and we're in effect making the decisions, then what we go out to hearing with, because of the limitations that the general manager referred to, you know, you can cut back, but you can't go beyond the scope of what's advertised, you're basically preempting that discussion. And the public input won't have much impact because you already have made the decision. We need to have enough room to move so that actually we can choose between doing A or B or C. And I think it would be a mistake to say, well, we don't want to get people to get too excited, so we're going to take these things out, and we'll just go out with this stuff, and that's the stuff we're going to do. And if people aren't happy with that, and they say we should do something else, we say, well, too bad, because we already made that decision, because we didn't include that in what we took out to public hearing.
I don't disagree. And I do agree that going to public hearing and not listening to what people have to say is a terrible mistake. One of the things we need to do is have some sense as to what our public thinks and would like. On the other hand, going out with, we're going to close the rail system at 10 o'clock when we have no intention of doing that, probably doesn't make an enormous amount of sense. And knowing what target we have is pretty useful. Now, if we want to go higher than that target and say, yeah, we want to have a pad of 3 million, 4 million, 5 million so we can adjust things, that's perfectly reasonable. But at this point, I'm not sure we know what the target is, and what we're trying to do is get some sense of what that target is.
Which is why I agree that to the extent that we're asking staff to come back with better information, to focus on things more, I'm all for all that, so we can get a better idea what the target is. I'm not prepared to make budgetary decisions, however.
We're not making any decisions. In all cases, we're saying go back. Ms. Hutchins.
I hate to belabor it too much, but I think it is important, because we're going through a process. I really would like to see the process a little bit more paired to us gathering information and being able to use that information. And I'm not sure what a vote does when we're asking staff for an analysis. You know, it's just we want as much information as possible in order to make the informed decision. Mr. Zimmerman was not in the room at the time. I don't at all disagree with the comment that we need to have the public engaged in this, and the only way they will be engaged is that we share with them the challenges that we have and what the budget reflects today. I think we could get more information if we could just openly have that discussion. If we'd like to lower numbers, change numbers, or get different analysis, let's ask for that, and let's ask for it as a budget request. It's not a motion. We're not making policy. We're simply gathering data.
Mr. Graham, would you be willing to withdraw your motion and we would turn this into a budget request?
Yes, I'd be very happy to have this as a budget request.
We are
the budget request I have in mind, since I have to vote on this. You know, this I'm not going to send to the jurisdictions a proposal which I don't feel has credibility. You know, I want them to have a realistic sense of what we're dealing with. And my budget request is that we consider that you respond to the notion of making the FY10 proposed budget at the same level as the FY9 proposed budget for the purposes of non-passenger revenue. And be sure to get back to us on this, because I just want to say that I did ask for an analysis for the impact on performance of these budget cuts that are already on the table, and I haven't gotten that yet. So I don't want you thinking I've forgotten that either.
Okay.
And I also asked for top-level management
justification.
I haven't gotten that either. And so I hope somebody's keeping track of all the things we're asking for, because I'm not forgetting them.
I haven't forgotten either, sir. It's coming on the 19th.
So this is another one I don't want people to forget. Sometimes when it's memorialized in a motion, it's a little bit heftier, but I can see that there's great
I'm keeping notes on each one of these also, and you'll be happy to know that I have a note here on the next chart that says administrative staffing increases over 12 months, which is your last request.
So actually, let's go to the next chart. This actually describes in detail the purchase services expense category, which, as you can see, we've looked at it from 2006, where our spend rate has been 50 million, 2007 around 50 million, and has gone up in 2008, and our budget for 2009 was 81.5 million, a considerable increase. And as a result, we've brought that forward, same level, a little bit lower, down to this proposed budget. Some of the major areas, as you can see, that are driving some of that increase are professional and technical. I'm sorry, am I on the wrong chart? Oh, yeah, right. I'm sorry, look at parking. So professional, technical, and as you can see, the increase almost doubling in 2009 and a little bit lower than that is a result of a couple of different things which I can talk to you about. One is the IT consulting services. To some extent, we've actually increased over $7 million, some of that increase in cost, and it relates to a lot of different factors, one being applications and systems which we currently implemented and invested in on capital last year, and now these are contracts to do systems integration with a lot of our systems, the control systems, the traffic transit control systems, as well as in-house systems as well. That makes up about $6 million or so of those contracts. The other type of consultant contracts that make up that increase is the increase of about $3 million, which is a million of it is the DuPont contract that we currently have for safety. And this is the safety initiatives that the general manager brought forward to reduce actually safety incidents, which we see it reducing costs on the claim side. And then we see operating efficiencies going forward.
What category are you in? I can't.
This is the professional and technical
category. This is all under professional and technical.
It's all under professional and technical.
Explaining a $17 million budget.
Yes, that's correct.
Explaining an increase from $11 million to $20 million in this year's budget, basically.
But that's in this year's budget. In the 10 budget.
Mm-hmm.
In the 10 budget, you're going from 20.4 to 17.4.
That's correct, right. But it's still an increase from prior year spending patterns. And what we were trying to describe was the fact that in 2008, that professional and technical expense was $11 million, and now in our proposed budget, it's $17 million. And what we were describing were some of the management initiatives that were increasing that those consulting expenses, one being the DuPont contract, for
it's
safety
less
initiatives.
Than the 9 approved budget.
Yeah.
Yes. So
there's got to be some other savings that are contributing, having a net reduction, 9 compared to 10.
I think, Mr. Graham, that the thing that's going on here is if you take a look at the year-to-date column.
Yes.
They only spent $5.5 million out of their budgeted $20 million halfway
right.
through the year.
Yes.
Which says they're more on track with the 2008 number than they are with the 2009. I'm giving a little bit of flexibility. That still raises the question of, is even the $17 million number too high? And in keeping with our previous comment, could we look at a potential reduction of a couple million dollars in this category also?
We could. I mean, we actually reduced a lot of our expenditures, or some of our expenditures in some areas this first quarter, as you recall, in anticipation that we would have a budget shortfall. So these are some of the areas that we think we can actually reduce in this category. We haven't explored some of those items, but we will bring back that list next week.
So, and I would also note that a good part of this is IT and a good part of other services in terms of the increase is IT, which makes us go back and the Technology Review Committee has been looking at the IT issues. We seem to be having rather sharp increases in what we're spending in IT.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that may be necessary, but it's well
yes.
worth reviewing because those mm-hmm. things can get carried away pretty quickly.
Well, there are also expenses as related to the Next 4 system on Smart Trip Card that we're doing. So those expenses are being carried forward into 2010 as well. And the And there's, actually, if we could, we can provide you a list of the IT projects at next week's meeting, so you can see the increase from year to year and the benefit that we're getting from these IT projects.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add to that, I think part of the explanation is the fact that historically we've been using capital funds to do a lot of the IT improvements for the organization through the Metro Matters program, and then moving forward, as those projects are delivered, and to maintain those projects and those systems, we have to shift the costs back over to the operating side. So many of those costs are to keep the systems we invested in building going forward, as well as doing the integration, as Carol mentioned.
And you see that line item that Emeka is indicating, the investment that we made in capital on systems and upgrading our technology. You see that line item in contract maintenance of the $31 million that we're proposing. Those are a lot of that is primarily the software and hardware maintenance contracts that we had to let in order to maintain some of the technology upgrades, and that's where you see a lot of that cost increasing.
Mr. Graham,
don't we have some leeway in terms of determining what to swing to operations away from capital, and don't we have an opportunity here to swing it back capital where we're obviously going to see some major support coming in the from the federal government and the
yes.
So, do we have to again as a budget request? Could we please examine that issue to see, you know, to what extent we don't have to swing from the operations from that?
Yeah.
Well, that issue will come up shortly as a policy issue, but I think you're doing it on a very specific issue, saying if IT is increasing because we're now putting more in the operating budget that used to be in capital, can we look at perhaps keeping it where it was? And I think maybe that the broader issue is, in a number of different areas, we're seeing that year-to-date expenses are substantially lower than what's budgeted for this year. We've got a grand total of $81 million budgeted. We're going at a spending rate that would put us at about 60-some-odd million by the end of the year, which still implies that although you've gone down to $80 million, there's maybe a $20 million area in there that's worthy of exploration. And could we look at, in particular, P&T, contract maintenance, and I think we'll talk some more about other services, but
yes, we can,
and take a look at something on the order of a $5 to $10 million reduction?
We can bring that back next week, yes.
Okay.
Make a note of that.
If you just go to the other services chart, we actually, on the purchase services chart, we have an item called other services. And on the next chart, we actually talk about other services. The next one. Yeah, oh, that's it. I'm sorry. Yeah. The big driver of cost on there, if you could look at.
Mr. Chair, before we proceed, are we also going to have a drill down on professional and technical services?
I don't have that here, but we can provide that at the next meeting.
Great.
Yeah. And just to clarify, though, professional services include the safety consultants, transportation consultants, actuarials that we have to do our claims adjustments. So we'll have a list of all of those items.
Appreciate it.
On this area, we have look at purchase services, which is the other category. The biggest change we have, is, as you can see, is two areas, smart card, which actually increases quite a bit, and that's as a result of the Next Fare 4 implementation that we're going to on Smart Trip Card and the technology behind that, as well as the processing fee for debit credit cards. And we talk about that a little bit later on debit credit cards. As people are using more debit credit cards, actually our costs are going up because we pay a flat fee for each transaction, and then we pay a volume fee, if you will, based on volume. It varies. I think the debit card, if you use a debit card, it's actually less cost for WMATA on the volume side. We get a bigger discount, if you will, from our vendors. But on that credit card, as the volume goes up, we actually have to pay more. So that actually cost is increasing. As we handle less cash and increase on the card, and the handling less cash actually gives us an efficiency increase, if you will, on some of our treasury revenue collections. And that's embedded in here as well.
Where is that embedded? Because that was one of the questions I was going to ask. I mean, it looks like at this point we're moving very, very heavily away from cash collection. So you ought to be able to take one or two of your revenue teams and drop them and service the machines a lot less frequently, because you don't have to take the cash out, you don't have to put fare cards in.
Yes, and actually, we have some of that efficiency baked into 2010, but actually, there should be more. We don't have it in here currently, because we're looking at things like taking the bags of money that we get at the Treasury Revenue Collection Facility, and instead of counting it, sending out to a bank and have them count it. Other transit properties do that, but that has implications to labor and personnel that we actually have to assess. But we can come back and look at that as well next week.
Yeah, in particular, take a look at changing the number of revenue teams out there and the frequency with which they go out, because that has always been a long-term plan, that as we move more towards a cashless society, that's one of the areas where hopefully we save some.
And we will look at that. We just need to make sure we balance it from a quality of the services that our customers can expect.
You want to be able to get a fare card out of the machine, and you want to be able to make sure it isn't jammed with money. But that doesn't mean you have to service it as often as we do now, if in fact we have large numbers of credit and debit transactions that relieve all of that. So another area where we're asking for a savings to come out.
Can we just be reminded how many Metro Transit police officers are involved in this function?
Yes.
The cash pickup. How many are there involved?
We know the number. I don't have it on the top of my head.
Do I remember 24?
So we need to get the absolute number. I don't want to tell you 24 and it's 54. Mr. Chair, if I can ask for clarification in your last statement, you said the direction was to come back with savings. Is the direction for us to do an analysis to determine if there can be savings?
I think we got at least an indication that not everything that could be considered has been considered. And if you could look into those other issues, such as the ones we just discussed, and come back with some savings, that would be what we're looking for. And it's consistent with the discussion we had earlier. We don't want to tell you a number, but it looks like there's some potential here. Also, in keeping with Mr. Yule's comment earlier about paper, the amount of paper around here, I noticed that the duplication is going up. Even though you're not really doing it in terms of year-to-date, I wonder if we might want to just arbitrarily dial that back somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million in order to try and...
That's not actually an external purchase. That's internal. That's internal. So that actually should not have been here. So you ran out of
We'll look into it. Yeah, we'll look into that.
One of the trade-offs, I mean, there is a way to make a tremendous reduction in the use of paper, at least theoretically, and that is to automate some of the processes. For an example, the materials that we give you. However, it's been my experience, even when you automate it, in some cases, it might generate more paper. So we will look at different options there, but if you do the automation, if you automate that, then there's a cost there also.
Well, you seem to be doing pretty well so far this year, so you seem to be on track for a savings compared to budget. So if that same effort can be continued into next year, we ought to be able to see a savings there.
Do we have our outside legal services? Is that in professional integrity?
Yes, it is, that's what you asked us to bring back next week.
On the established the fund for the retiree health liability. This was actually a GASB 45 accounting change that occurred in 08. We have actually included in this budget a $5 million item to fund that liability, and because it is a growing liability and we're committed to it, and it can have some impact to our financial status, if you will, if we do not fund it. So if you look actually just on the next page, what we're recommending is, given the severe economic crisis and our budget gap, maybe the board consider that we set up the trust and the fund and the framework for the funding the health liability, and there's a commitment on behalf of the board to fund that in 2011, and that would actually relieve the budget of about a $4 million savings.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Yule.
My board just had the same discussion last night in terms of our budget.
The $5 million is already, is in your proposed budget right now, and this is an option that you're offering up that get down to the end, near the end, and we look at the bottom line, can consider this option in terms of further reducing the shortfall.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I was going to say, it's an excellent option to be on the table, but it's not something that I think we ought to readily jump to say, let's do it, because we got to pay this money anyway, and we may as well just be committed to doing it. So, all right.
So, we had the same discussion last year, and as you remember, we took it out. I like the proposal that we start the process now, and as Mr. Yule points out, sooner or later we do have to pay for it. The question is now the time to start paying and setting up a reserve for it. Certainly making this the year at which we start to set it up makes a lot of sense to me, and I think probably all the other members of the committee. Is there any objection to essentially accepting conceptually the proposal to save these $4 million? I would note one thing. Prior to a meeting that I had with Maryland officials earlier this week, I would have said your 2011 proposal was one I strongly support. Not clear to me at this point that Maryland will be able to pay any more than it did in prior years. So let's say we're certainly going to do it, and as soon as we possibly can. I'm not sure that 2011 is going to be the year that we can do it. I would love to, but I'm good.
On the next chart, it goes to actually Mr. Graham's discussion on the federal funding of maintenance expenses. And actually, just to give you a little bit of history, we are funded, obviously, our operations primarily, besides the subsidy, by operating grants, FTA. And we, most of those monies go to a variety of different projects. We actually have, we had an existing cap of 10% of those funds that we would actually move to the operating budget that would fund things that we called, were called preventive maintenance. There's no longer a cap on this particular federal use, if you will, and as a result, the ability to transfer some of those funds to operating is really a management or a board decision. Currently, we do $21 million that we transfer, and when we transfer over it, we actually, you know, so we relieve our capital funding, if you will, by $21 million and move it into operating. So we can't do $21 million worth of capital projects. To the extent that we have stimulus packages that are coming, it's a decision that the board can look at. The FTA has indicated to us that we have ability to take any dollar amount of those funds and move them into operating, but that's a decision that you can look at as well.
And this gets back to the little lecture that I keep giving. We did this preventive maintenance capitalization 6 years ago?
Maybe even longer.
8 years ago?
Yeah.
Once you do it, you've done it forever because you can't fill the hole. So that says if we add another $10 million or $15 million or $20 million. It's something we can do, but that's the amount that we've taken out of our capital budget, not only this year, but every year. That's one of the reasons I think the stimulus funds are beside the point here, because they, in fact, don't have much to do with the fact that we're going to take money out of our capital budget every year. So it's not a policy decision where there's a clear yes or no. It's one where we have to do it in a very informed fashion and say, is it more important for this money to relieve an operating burden, or is it more important to make sure that we do the rehabilitation and replacement functions of our capital program?
Well, I'll make two notes.
Same dollars.
2 points on that. And one is not that we, other transit properties take probably maybe all of their operating grants that they receive and move it into federal grants and move it into operating, but because they're funded by, you know, sales tax revenues and other earmarked items. But if you looked at the pool of preventive maintenance at Metro, it's probably about $500 million, which is mostly labor and obviously, you know, repairing and maintaining the rolling stock assets and equipment and assets that we have. To the extent we only move over $20 million of that, in my opinion, should we reevaluate that number, because we haven't reevaluated it in many years, I think the answer is yes, the board should look at that. Should that number be higher? I think it should be, given the pool of maintenance that you have. What that number is, we can, I think it, we can talk about as well. But the second point that you make is a good one. The one-time solution is probably not sustainable.
Well, and also, the general manager has put before us a $12 billion capital need over the last, over the next 10 years, of which only about $8 billion under any circumstances is clearly funded. So we already have a $4 billion shortfall in that program. This would make it slightly larger. So it's an issue that is a pure policy issue, but it's one that we have to do in a very informed and thoughtful fashion. Mr. Zimmerman.
Just to clarify, since we often have questions about what the feds pay for and what they don't pay for, and the short answer is that they pay for capital. They don't pay for the things that operate, go to operating transit systems. And I think that this could cause confusion, even with the small magnitude we're talking about, which is almost trivial size of things. But when we say operating here, what this really is about is the part of a capital program that's in your operating budget, what in our budget we call PAYGO capital. There are things that you're doing that you're not going to bond.
Right.
They're not like 30-year expense items, but they're capital items. They're replacing, you know, the tires on the bus or, you know, various kinds of things, as you said a few times.
Well, can I just clarify, from a GAAP point of view, that is not capital. That's not a capital item.
Yes, I know. And that's part of the difficulty is that we use the same terms to mean different things. So, you know, when accountants are using them, they mean one thing, and when certain kinds of policymakers, they mean another thing. But this is not money that can be used basically to subsidize someone's ride on a bus. But in terms of the budget, there are things that are capital, that go to the asset value, that are spent on a more, you know, short-term basis, some of them even annual.
Right.
And so they're, in that sense, part of the operating budget.
Right.
And you can flex this money over to there by that rationale, that's what you're really doing is protecting the asset.
That's correct. You make that type of expenses, which is daily maintenance, change out the trucks, the brakes, things like that.
IT.
Those are definitely maintainable expenses that you need to do that. Anytime you extend the economic life of an asset, that's considered an overhaul, and those you would typically fund with capital dollars.
In economic terms, it's capital. In accounting terms, it's operating because what they care about is the year in which it's expended. But conceptually, which is the basis for the policy, it's a capital item still. Thank you.
So what's the bottom line here? Where are we?
At some point, we as a board have got to decide, and I would suggest that's after everything else is done, this is where you start looking, as to what degree are we going to want to reduce forever our capital flow in order to solve some operating issues, even though noting carefully Mr. Zimmerman's comment that these are effectively capital items. But
yeah,
what it does do is it reduces the number of things that we've already said we want to do under capital that we now can't do because we're doing things that otherwise we would have called operating.
Your point is still valid.
But we need to know what are the consequences. This can't be, you know, considered as a theoretical construct. I mean, the general manager has to tell us. If we were to take, I mean, we know we have a $4 billion shortfall, but if we were to take another $10 million, for example, I'm just making that number up, what are the consequences? And none of us know that without his advice.
And keep in mind, it's $10 million per year, every year, forever.
So can that be a budget request?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I know how you're going to answer it, but it certainly is a budget request. There's a little doubt in my mind that as we get farther in this process, we're going to consider this very seriously. But I don't know quite how you give the answer of what happens if you take $10 million out.
But we also have, Peter, we also have Ameka's comment that one of the reasons for the increase in IT is the shift.
Well, I agree with that
one.
That's a separate one. But
what
yeah,
the cost of the shift is, which we don't know because that's part of our next week's drill down, right?
Yes.
And then we have to decide, you know, whether we want to do the shift.
That's one additional one that could go back to the capital.
Right. So it's one. Could be $5 million, could be $1 million, could be nothing.
Mm-hmm. The other item on debit credit cards, committee had asked for a look at what that looked like, and we actually have a nice little chart here that shows the blue line, which is the number of transactions. This is a monthly average based upon this fiscal year and the dollar amount that goes into that. And as I said earlier, there's not a one-for-one transaction. There's a big gap there between the number of transactions and the dollar value, and that's really only predicated on the fact that more people are using debit cards, and as the volume increases, that's a lower cost to Metro. But when people use credit cards, that's a higher cost. So that just gives you a view as to the increasing cost that we're seeing as a result of people using debit credit cards over time.
Actually, this looks good. We're doing what we're supposed to do.
Yes, it does. We just have to renegotiate those contracts. next area that the committee asked for was on accident and claim. This is workers' comp and third-party claims. As you can see, year-to-date for FY 2009, the workers' comp or claim payments are about $9.4 million, a bit more than the actuals on the spend rate of the actuals for the prior year. So we are budgeting actually a $16.5 million item for that. Although the number of claims are going up, and we don't have that on the chart, I apologize, we can get that to you. The number of transactions are going down, but the dollar value is going up, excuse me. We see the same sort of thing on third-party claims, although we have some puts and takes there on 07 and 08, and that's the result of deaths that we've had and we've had to settle on and pay out on, which we actually haven't had those issues going forward, or incidents, excuse me. The area that we can improve on this is actually the subrogation area, which is actually we can, claims that we can do the subrogate in terms of folks hitting our assets, bus accidents and things like that. We're actually looking at how we can do a better job at subrogation and getting those claims back into our coffers.
This is one of those areas where actual and budget are confusing numbers. Are the actual numbers here the actual draws from the reserve?
These are the general ledger numbers that hit our general ledger. So these are actual payments that go out.
Okay, so these are the actual draws from the reserve, while the 09 numbers are what's budgeted to go into the reserve.
No.
That's the assumed forecast that we have for claim payments going out. So, and that's based on actuarial information.
Okay, so you're saying that at this point you think you're going to pay out $33 million from the reserve in 09?
Correct.
That's correct.
Okay, but you're putting in $34 million. So we're actually building up the reserve this year, yes.
Mm-hmm. If you looked at the reserve trend, I think there was a board policy.
20%,
To keep it at 20%, that's correct. So we anticipate in order to get to 20%, we'll get there in FY 11?
10.
Or 10, actually, we're there now. Okay, so we want to keep it at that level.
I hear you. I just looking at where you are relative to budget and your actuarial claims, mm-hmm. looks like you're... Is there about a $5 million balance right now? That's where I thought it was. You stopped reporting to us where all the reserve balances are.
Okay. I don't know. We can get that to you.
Mm-hmm. If that's the case, 17 looks a hair high. Mm-hmm. Could you look at possibly reducing that by about $2 million?
We can look at that. The problem we have is that we actually rely on our third-party administrator and our actuarials to sort of give us this data, and it's based on a bunch of trend data and information. The issue that we have is that the cost of the claim is going up because health care costs are going up, and it's an uncontrollable expense to us. Certainly we can reduce the amount of incidents, and I believe we're doing that with our safety initiatives, but we can take a look at it.
Yeah, I think there are two trends that are going on here, and I think you identified them quite well, and that is our rate of claims is going down because of our safety initiative. That's good. But the cost of each claim is going up because the cost of health care is going up.
Right.
And those two balance one another in a curious way. When I look at where the reserve is and the difference between what the actuary has recommended each year and what the actual claims are, in other words, I suspect mm-hmm. you will, even in this really weird year, you know,
averaging it out, you'll come in low. If you could look at the potential for just discounting that a little bit and saving a couple million, that would probably be good. You know, I know that this is an unusual year with my claims, but you're then saying the same thing next year. Jim Brown.
Oh, sorry, go
ahead. The 17 million, you're referring to the workman's comp FY 2010 budget, the 16.9
million. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's a grand total of 34.1.
To reduce that by 2 million.
Yeah. It's really the combination that matters because they both go into the same reserve.
I share your perspective, but more so in the workman's comp side. I did a quick calculation. I figured we could probably save $1 billion just in the workman's comp side. Right. Take the two together, get you to 2 million. So.
It looked like it was going up a little bit faster than probably should. I came home with the same.
Yep.
Mr. Brown.
Chairman, I have a quick question. Have we done any comparison for how other systems are? Are we more accident-prone or less accident-prone than other systems in the country?
We do have some of those comparisons. I know from a vehicle accident standpoint, we have less a percentage of accidents. But from an employee standpoint, I have to ask, I'll say to the department, I'm not quite sure if we have those. I'm sure we have some comparisons. I just don't know what they are right off the top of my head. I don't know if we can have those by next week or is it going to take longer?
We can get them by next week. But primarily, industries don't readily share that information for fear of the
recession. Thank you.
Thank you. Continue, Mr.
I think also it adds to that comment that there's some laws that we look at Virginia, Maryland, and the district that are different in terms of how we pay out claims and how those are looked at. So that affects our unique world that's different than some of the other transit properties. I will say this, that we actually are on track to revamp the organization of the risk management in Metro, and that will help this area quite a bit because we're having folks that come in that actually employees that look at this on a basis to sort of minimize the impact of cost on those claims. So,
thank you.
And
that
that's
us to the end of this discussion.
That's the end.
You want to review the financials and come back after the executive session, or pretend just to say what happened in the executive session? Any concern about just going through the monthly finance? Oh, the other thing that I should comment on, a number of board members, I think you noted, were very confused about the various pieces of paper we had, you know, what's in this book, what's in that book,
yes.
What's in the other one.
Yes.
And for those of us that mark up whatever it is that we got at home, you very often have one more thing that you're concerned about. One of the standard things that Kate Hanley used to do when she was on the board was she would bring her marked up version and say, I'm on page 39, what page are you guys on? And, you know, everybody was always on some other page. If you could try and focus the materials and make sure to whatever degree there's more than one copy of anything, like the one we got at home and the one you give us here, that they have the same page numbers on it so that we're all looking at the same thing, it sure makes the discussion a lot easier. And if possible, avoid the number of, you know, having too many trees get killed in the process. You want to tell us about the financials for December? We're halfway through the year. It tells
yes.
you a little bit of where we are in 09. And
yeah, I'll just touch
yeah. by two and you get the year.
Just yeah. touch briefly on page 96 of the morning's handout, looking at.
Mr. Chairman, I had asked that the stimulus recovery we get an update on what's happening.
It's on the agenda.
Yeah.
It's item 3B. I think you had passed over early.
Sorry. I was looking at the one that got mailed out, which didn't have it. Why don't you go ahead with that, and we'll come back, and we'll do 3B. Sorry.
Okay.
I can do this very briefly. Page 96 of the morning's package, the chart at the bottom of that page tracks ridership, and it was correctly stated we're halfway through this fiscal year. And on a year-to-date basis, Metro Rail ridership is growing at a rate of 4% above last year's actuals. Metro Bus is growing at a rate of 3% above last year's actuals. And what you can see kind of in the bottom right of this chart is what we were talking about earlier. It's about a point better than the budget assumed, and it's rounding up to 2 points better on Metro Bus. So that's the addition that we add into next year's base. So this is kind of adjusting for the fact that we're doing better than we thought this year. On the next page, there's a very brief summary that talks about the dollars. And at the bottom line, at the subsidy line, we're basically right on budget halfway through the year. There's a number of management cost controls that have been put in place. We're still anticipating that this number will be in the range of $9 million better than budget by June 30th. It's hiring freezes and reductions in overtime and those kind of things. But halfway through the year, we're right on the mark.
Okay. My apologies. Back to item 3B, the stimulus package.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to do a quick update on the economic stimulus legislation, the staff's selection of projects, and what our next steps are in moving this program forward. I will apologize that the document that you have in front of you, based upon the quick-moving nature of the bill, is changing. But I will kind of walk you through what we knew as of yesterday and update you with what I know or what we know about the program today. The version of the American Recovery and Investment Act.
Where is these materials?
Separate handout.
This should be in blue in your book, I believe, the presentation.
Okay.
My apologies. We're moving quickly on this program, as you can tell. But just to run through the latest, we do know that the House and the Senate were in conference yesterday, and we believe they're moving to closure. A few of the details are being wrapped up as we speak. Both bills have things that are slightly different, but there are some similarities. I want to walk you through what we know today. Obviously, the House bill came in a little lower. The total funding came in higher, but specific parts of the bill that are of key interest to us came in lower. The transit formula funding, which the authority would receiving the majority of its funds from in the Senate bill, was a little bit higher, 8.4 versus 7.5 in the House bill. The conference, coming out of conference, it looks like the Senate number may hold or tick down just a little bit. One major difference was that were some fairly clear discretionary programs laid out. The New Start, Small Starts program in the House bill and the Rail Modernization program have been struck from the Senate bill, so those key programs are not there. What we have heard is that there was a large discretionary program for about $5.5 billion for projects of regional significance that we would be able to compete for projects within that is still making its way through. We will hear hopefully today or tomorrow whether or not that has passed through. One key difference is the deadline for obligating funds, which is really the key here. The purpose of the stimulus is, of course, to jolt the economy. So there was a premium put on projects that were ready within 90 days or 180 days. The House version had 90 days. The Senate version had 180 days to obligate 50% of the program. And then the House bill had a two-year time frame for the complete program, and the Senate bills had just 1 year. So that's really an important key distinction that we're going to be paying a lot of attention to and hopefully get some clarity. And it will actually frame some of the projects we choose to select versus those that we don't. And again, we will do our best. I know the general manager is briefing you on a weekly basis, and we'll continue to provide that information to you.
Mr. Chairman, can I interrupt just at this point? Because I know that there are certain elements, and I know there's a variety in this right now, but there's certain elements of the stimulus which have restrictions against supplanting, you know, existing budgetary commitments. Do we find those restrictions in the transit area here?
Yes. There are restrictions. You cannot, at least, I'm not sure what's coming out of conference, but what was in the bill before, if you have funding for a project, you can't take these dollars and replace that funding. You can identify projects that, you know, that you had a loss of funding or there was a gap in the funding and they qualify for the project, but you can't. For an example, if we have monies today to purchase 100 vehicles, I can't, once this is passed, move those monies out and then substitute the dollars in. Not if I've already identified I have a funding source. But given that this agency has such a large need for capital improvements and needs, there's no problem with us spending or committing 100% or whatever comes to us.
And we will be sitting down with FTA. In fact, we are talking with them today to better understand some of those restrictions, and we'll be very well informed and make sure we can maximize.
But it's, are these restrictions to be found in both Senate and House bills? I mean,
they're in everything.
No, they're not. They're not. We had a hearing on this yesterday at the council. And in fact, it is rather uneven as to where, am I right?
Yeah.
That's what we were told yesterday. Is it some, in some areas there are restrictions, in some areas there are not, and some aspects of the House bill, some it differs. There's a patchwork quilt here.
If we can, I'll suggest that
we are important to us. Do we have a strategy in mind for dealing with
it? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And again, we'll be meeting with FTA today. In fact, I'll raise that very issue that you bring up and see if we can get some clarity about whether or not that applies for federal transit funds.
Okay. So you'll send out a kind of a...
Yes. Update.
An update to us by email?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll continue on. The next slide shows the Metro's list of prioritized stimulus projects. And what we're showing here is the distribution by mode. To give you a sense, we're looking at essentially 50% for rail, almost 40% for bus, 3% for metro access, and the balance are focused on agency-wide programs to support the ongoing efficiency of the organization. What we have done, just to walk you through the process, is we have done our job in terms of matching these up with the strategic priorities of the agency, talking to our jurisdictional partners and other interest groups. And then we've also built a really informed internal technical group to go through these projects in a lot of detail. What we've done is we've confirmed our shovel readiness, and I've brought my prop here. We're ready to make sure that the projects that we're presenting for you are going to be things that we want to get in the ground and get the work moving as quickly as possible to meet the requirements of the bill. Again, they're linked to the strategic goals of the agency. They are shovel ready. They're going to produce jobs, and they're going to address some of the policy and historical policy issues we've had, specific on the state of good repair. Any questions on the slide?
I have one, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind. Yeah. That definition of of shovel ready is going to differ from community to community, state to state, and system to system. Other cities or other systems are going to be watching how we spend our dollars and how we define shovel ready, because they're going to come in and try to take our dollars if we are not really shovel ready. So just keep that in mind as we are defining it as really not in the pipeline, not someone's idea, that is really ready to go, because other systems are going to try to take those dollars, just like we'll be watching other systems to see that they're not spending any.
Absolutely.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Director Brown, you're absolutely right on that issue. One of the ground rules that I gave staff was, I don't want just a commitment within 2 years. I want projects that we have actual expenditures, that we've spent the money over the two-year period of time. Because if we are able to demonstrate that we're putting this money to work as Congress and the President has, I think, the intent of the program, we have a great opportunity to take advantage of those individuals who didn't do that. And so we will not leave $1 unspent. We're not going to be the one that someone is going to be taking money from. We're going to demonstrate that we can get it done and hopefully pick up additional dollars.
That's right. That's been made very clear on a number of occasions. The next slide is showing you within the different asset categories that we've spent dollars historically, both our Metro Matters program and our ongoing capital program, where we're spending the dollars, really focus on taking some care of some of that maintenance that we discussed during the budget presentation. We have developed a list that we are going to be taking forward for $325 million worth of projects, essentially giving us the room to be able to address, as you mentioned, those that have not spent those dollars, have projects that are then ready to come up and take care of other systems. They may not be moving those forward, as well as giving us further room if we see that projects run into problems internally or through the contracting or permitting process. We can then swap them with projects that are ready to be spent against. And the final slide, just going to walk you through some of the next steps. Next Wednesday, we'll be going before the Transportation Planning Board to request inclusion in the TIP for these projects. This goes to the point about not supplanting funds, ensuring that there's projects in the regional plan to spend these dollars against. We expect approval. I believe that the other state DOTs will be coming the following month, so we're actually already a month ahead in terms of getting our projects in the pipeline. Concurrently, we're going to begin grant applications to submit to FTA to get these projects teed up with them. And then obviously the next steps after that, once we're through those hurdles, is to begin awarding contracts. And we will do our best to communicate not only through the general manager, but through the federal recovery.gov website and our own WMATA website in terms of our progress on both obligating, implementing, and reporting back in terms of jobs and the improvement to the system. So that's where we stand today. I'd be happy to take questions about specifics. I've included for your review a view as to where we were when we came to you in January with the broad categories for the 530 that we had the board endorse, and then the projects, the 325 that actually made it through the prioritization process. It shows the split in terms of percentages of projects, and then details some of the specific projects that we're working and teeing up to actually move forward.
Mr. Monomay, thank you. I think many of us are going to want to look through those detailed lists and review them carefully, and this may end up being an agenda item at our next meeting or the meeting after that, where we want to just see whether that matches our expectations, but it's going to take a little bit of time to review and evaluate.
I appreciate it. And one more thing I wanted to put on the table. One of the other opportunities that we want to pursue, there are several competitive grants out there, not only in FTA, but other energy efficiency grants that we want to pursue with some of our jurisdictional partners. And this is something we may be reaching out to ask directors to support that request with the jurisdictions, either for specific energy savings projects or projects of regional significance.
Mr. Graham.
Right. I have the advantage of having been in a hearing yesterday on all these issues. But one question I wanted to raise was, each of our jurisdictions has transit priorities independent of Metro WMATA. For example, in the District of Columbia, we hope to develop, I'm just speaking for us, we hope to develop a light rail Juno project and other projects. I mean, how is this process proceeding in terms of those regional interests? In other words, to what extent is Metro WMATA recognizing that there are distinctive objectives and ambitions in each of our jurisdictions relating to transit? To what it looked to us yesterday that Metro WMATA, at least insofar as the District of Columbia, that you were going to absorb the transit money in a way which might not be happening in Maryland or Virginia. And so there's been a lot of concern expressed.
Okay, that's a good point. I think the nature of the program that we're putting forward is very much a regional program, looking at things that will benefit the entire system, all the jurisdictions within the system. I think the opportunity for moving forward the agendas or the projects of individual jurisdictions lies in those competitive grants. And I think we are very supported and very interested in working with you in submitting a grant application for those projects. I believe that's what may be happening in Maryland. I think we've started some conversations with some of the jurisdictions about a potential bus rapid transit program where we could work together. I think the rail car purchase is something that came up at TPB as a potential, again, a regional ask. But if there's specific projects that you're interested in the district, I think that's something, taking the general manager's lead, that we'd be happy to work with you in supporting.
In fact, Mr. Graham, Director Graham, one of the issues that we discussed is briefly, and again, this we're doing this every day as the bill goes forward, is looking at, from a regional standpoint, different quarters of how do we help put together projects that address the needs. For an example, I'm just using an example, and that's something that I'm communicating that we're going to do. It's 8th Street and K Street quarters in Virginia, looking at Columbia Pike as well as other quarters of different types of discussions that have occurred before. That we are beginning the process of just getting information together so we can work with the regional partners. If the program is out there, $5 billion of projects of regional significance, our intent is to look regionally. How do we help put together a regional project that funds programs that are not specifically managed by Metro, but impact the mobility of this whole region? So we are working in that focus.
Any other comments on this? That leaves us with two items at this point for us to do before we recess into executive session. The first one is, I'd like to comment, as I did at the beginning, on the process that's going on here. I do believe that the staff did an excellent job, by the way, in preparing this budget and in presenting this budget and in commenting on this budget during this discussion. It's the nature of the fiduciary responsibility we have to push real hard on that and make sure that if there's anything there that we can spot, that we've had a chance to explore it, understand it, and be in the best possible position to find the least impact upon our riders and our constituents. So I wanted to compliment all of you on a really good job. You did well. We pushed you hard, and you gave good answers and reasonable responses, and there are a number of things that you need to go back and take a look at and give us some more answers on. But we were playing around the edges of an enormous job that you guys did, and I want to just note how well you actually did on all of that. So we appreciate it. I do have to move, and I'll need a second, that the board, actually it's the committee, meet in executive session to discuss budgetary matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6A, personnel matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6C, and contractual matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6D. We will then reconvene in open session of the committee following the executive session to certify the discussions and to act upon any items that were discussed in executive session that do require action. Do I have a second? Did I hear a second?
Second, you did.
Mr. Brown. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Is there anybody opposed? All right. We are recessing
now
to
we
executive
leave
session. Leave as much as you can.